Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com.
For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events,
sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the show tonight. So glad to have you here. And we're praying that the Blog Talk Boogeyman doesn't visit us again tonight and that we're able to get our whole interview in scot-free with my wonderful guest, Ian R. Elliott. Some of you might have been here last week and noticed that we had technical difficulties, and I want to assure you, those of you that have come back, tap your partner because there was a lot of ground that we didn't cover last week. And I'm excited to talk about that tonight. And we have a surprise this week that we didn't have last week, which both of us are very surprised about. So I will say my guest tonight is Ian R. Elliott. On May 16, 1994, Ian fell asleep at the wheel going 80 miles an hour and woke up 3.5 weeks later in a Billings hospital with major traumatic brain injury. He has since dedicated his life to thriving, not just surviving, as well as helping others to do the same. Ian is a trained rehabilitation counselor and often utilizes the arts as an empowering tool for persons with disabilities, either directly or indirectly. Another treatment he's been offering with optimistic success is hyperbaric oxygen, HBOT, which you guys heard a little bit last night about from Les Paul's guest. So we'll ask Ian some extra questions about that tonight. Ian is past president of the Brain Injury Association of Montana and is currently serving as a board member on the Brain Injury Alliance of Montana. He's also on the Governor's TBI Advisory Council and spent 6.5 years as Montana's TBI Project Coordinator. So without further ado, I'm going to bring back my guest from last week, Ian Elliott. Ian, are you with me?
I sure am. Thanks for the wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. I'm so sorry about what happened last week, but hopefully all that's behind us. And like I said, you know what the surprise is for everybody tonight. And there was a couple of things that we didn't even get to talk about last week. But I think where we'll start, I did mention about your accident, and you were on a kind of a, Ian lives in Montana, and he was on a little road trip across Montana when he fell asleep at the wheel, had a terrible collision. And why don't you pick up there? Because I love, you know, in my book that I wrote, it's about God and miracles. And when you told this particular part of your story you're going to tell right now, those kind of things just tickle me. So I'm sorry you had to see a miracle the way that you did. Actually, you didn't, I guess, but you heard about it later, right? But tell us what happened. You had this horrible collision, and in Montana, it's like, in fact, I talked to a friend of mine before this show, Ian, and she said, oh my God, when I was telling her a little bit about you, she said, that's got to be as bad as driving across Nebraska, meaning not a lot of traffic, you know?
That's right. It was a collision with the road.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So tell us what happened.
Well, I was and still am a theater director, and at the time of the day of the accident, it followed a weekend of activity at the historic Babcock Theater here in Billings. It's an 800-seat, beautiful theater that I was working to keep open, and I had a lot of help. It was volunteers that helped present big screen films, classics basically, like Meet Me in St. Louis and Gone with the Wind, that sort of thing. And then a lot of theater and concert productions. And we kept this thing going. I found out later that at the time of my accident, we had some like 240 presentations, and the year wasn't even over yet. And I was basically the only full-time employee. And there was a part-time concession person and a part-time office assistant. And it was a lot of work. And, of course, I loved the place, and I just was really dedicated, too dedicated, as it turns out, to keeping the show shows coming. And I had just finished directing, and opening night was Friday the 13th, of all things, in 1994. And it was... the production was the musical comedy Nonsense, the sequel to Nonsense. And I opened it on Friday the 13th. On Friday the 14th, I played again. And in that morning, the next morning, I taught Sunday school Sunday. And then I did two concerts in the Sunday afternoon, one with Joe Firecrow, a Grammy Award-winning native flute player. He won a Grammy after this occurred. And
wow.
And I put him together with a guy who played didgeridoo, Paul Taylor. And so his native flute meets didgeridoo. It was one of a kind of a concert. And that evening I did a concert with Beth McIntosh. She was a Wyoming, and still is a really outstanding Wyoming songwriter, singer. And I basically had to, when the concert ended, I had to put the set back together for the following weekend. And so I got to bed at about 2 in the morning that night, and I set the alarm because I was supposed to go Monday to Bozeman, which is about a 2.5-hour drive from Billings. And I was going to meet the press there and the media and promote the touring production of Nonsense 2 coming over there. So that was I just felt I had to make the trip, even though I was really dog tired. I only had about 4.5 hours of sleep. And I set the cruise control at 80. That's why I know it was 80 miles an hour. And I put the music of Enya in, real soothing, wonderful music. And I was basically an accident waiting to happen. I was real tired. And I got out on the highway and got past Livingston. So I was going to go to Bozeman, which was about another 20 miles through the mountains. And needless to say, I fell asleep and woke up 3.5 weeks later. I do remember the actual impact of the hitting the dividing. There's a divider in the interstate where the highway patrol and other emergency vehicles use, and that's basically where I went off the freeway and hit that. And the car bucked up, the van is a Chrysler minivan, bucked up and slammed down, and despite my wearing a seatbelt, it broke. It's one of the Chrysler vans that year that they had a class action suit later, and I was ejected from the vehicle. And I'm really glad that I don't remember any of that. I did have a near-death experience, however. And I went to there was the tunnel we hear about. I basically saw this pinpoint of light, and it got larger. Whether I was moving towards it or it towards me, I don't know, but I was on the other side. And it was very misty, and the sun was coming through the mist, but it was totally quiet, very soothing. And after all that raucous weekend of activity, I was really very ready to just stay there and be quiet. And I saw these three figures coming towards me in the fog, and I couldn't make out who they were, but they were very welcoming. And I heard this voice. It was a male voice, and it said, would you like to stay with us? And I said, I'd love to, and I really did, except my show opens tonight. I had retrograde amnesia in the near-death experience because the show had already opened. Yeah, but I said, I've got to get to the Babcock. My show opens. And just like that, I woke up, and I was suddenly 3.5 weeks later, I was in a hospital bed. And one of the first things that I said, and I heard murmuring outside my door, I noticed it was a hospital bed because I was a former nurse's aide. I recognized the rails, and I could see out the window. I realized I was in Billings because there was a cliff of rocks on the north side called Rim Rocks, and I could see them. So I knew I was in Billings, and I heard this murmuring, and it was a nurse just outside the door. And I called to her, and I said, excuse me, but my mouth wouldn't work, Kim. It was just like talking through glue. And I said, excuse me. And she turned, and she said, Ian. And she came towards me and said, you've been away for a while. We're glad to see you with us today. And I didn't know what she was talking about or why she knew my name. But I said, I don't know where I am or how I got here. I've just got to get to the Babcock tonight. My show opens. And she looked at me really quizzically and then said, Ian, what day is it? And I said, in that labored voice, mid-May. And she said, it's June 6th. You had a terrible accident. You went to sleep at the wheel, apparently. You were ejected, and he landed on the interstate on the center line, and all I can tell you, Ian, is we're really glad to have you back. You've got a sustained a traumatic brain injury, a serious one, and some other things with your shoulder and other things, but we're glad to have you back. It's just you're not going to be going to the Babcock anytime soon. And that was my opening step into the world of disability with a traumatic brain injury.
Wow. You know, something you don't know, but my ruptured brain aneurysm happened on Friday the 13th in 1995.
Well, you know, we hear these things about Friday the 13th, and I think you and I apparently are verification to keep your eyes open and watch your back on that day.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's not exactly true. I do need to correct that. My aneurysm happened on the 9th, but my surgery, my craniotomy, was on Friday the 13th. So it actually wound up being, I mean, my life was saved that day by the surgery, but I couldn't believe it. Of all the things we've talked about that we've had in common on our few phone calls, that's never come up before.
Yeah. Well, my accident is actually the 16th, but the weekend, the 13th, that's the first day I don't remember. You know, I have retrograde amnesia, and that started the whole thing. And I asked one of my nuns, one of the actresses that played the nun, and I said, how'd the show go? And she said, well, Ian, you were there. We opened the show. You mean you don't remember it? And I said, I have no clue. I can't remember anything about that performance. And she said, well, if that's the case, we were wonderful. And I thought, what a great opportunity for an actress to tell the director how they did on stage.
Oh, my goodness. So tell us a little bit about your recovery. I know DJ, one of our hosts, is going to probably call in later. He was wanting to know about the length of your recovery and what kind of things that you did in your recovery.
Well, I guess I was fortunate because most people are in and out of the hospital fairly quickly. I had been in the hospital for, a little over two weeks when I first woke up. And I was there mid-June until the end of July, so 6 weeks in the hospital. And then I went from there to a residential rehabilitation program in Denver because we didn't have anything like that in Billings or surrounding area. So I went to Denver Learning Services campus, and I was there supposed to be there for 7 weeks, and I was there for, I worked to get out early, and I did 6 weeks later. So it wasn't until the early September of 94 that I actually was starting to do outpatient rehabilitation, and that went on for another year. It wasn't until the following summer that Workman's Comp signed off on the case. They said, you're at maximum level recovery. And I have to point this out for if there's any professionals listening in, that I was told that, and this is after a year of extensive therapy, occupational therapy, rehabilitation, included swim therapy and other things, speech therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that whole intense outpatient time, I was told I no longer had executive level function, nor would I ever.
Ah, and it was a familiar story to a lot of us.
Yeah, and it was just like shutting the door on my future. You just don't have it. And they said, Ian, you've worked really hard. You've kept your appointments. You've worked really hard to get better. But I have to say, you had a serious accident, a serious injury, and you no longer have executive level function. And that was just it could be a real doorstop for a lot of people. For me,
oh yeah,
it was, oh yeah. Maybe they're right, but I'm going to sure find out myself.
I'll show them.
I went home that night. Believe it or not, that night, very night, I named my company. I started my company not knowing what I was doing, but I was going to keep presenting the performing arts, and I called it Arts Partners Unlimited, and I gave my title Executive Director.
Nice title. I like it.
I had a great title. No substance, but I had a great title, and somehow that encouraged me that, yeah, I was an executive director, and so screw it. I'm going to go forward and keep presenting theater. And I was very fortunate. I was contacted by an actor in Bozeman named Dennis Seibel, and I'd worked with him on a Mark Twain show before, and he said, Ian, I've always wondered what what Norman Rockwell was really like as a person, because we all enjoyed his illustrations and the humor in them with Saturday Evening Post, but we never knew much about him. So I decided to do a one-man show based on his life and his art. Would you direct it? So for me,
wow,
it was a real good shot to do it. And this Dennis was really committed, and we had to get the rights from the Norman Rockwell estate and the boys.
Wow.
The Saturday Evening Post and everyone else to be able to show that. I wanted to show the illustrations during the show, large projections, and we had to get the rights to do that. And then the set was basically an easel and a couple chairs, and it was like visiting Norman Rockwell in his studio. And then as he talked about his life, these illustrations would come up on the screen, and he would tell the stories behind them. And we were granted permission to do the show where we were the only theatrical production authorized based on the life of Norman Rockwell. And
wow.
It ended up going on national tour. We even played Rockwell's hometown and ended up in Branson, Missouri for some like four or five years, 6 days a week.
Wow.
And
I
just directed it, and then Dennis went off and running. But, you know, it was really empowering for me to realize I still had the ability to do something worthwhile.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you had that seed planted in your head. That was quite the coup to pull off. You must have felt great and grateful in back of that. What a neat thing.
And I wasn't done yet. I decided I was, if I don't have executive level function, the best way for me to find out is to go to grad school.
Oh, geez, you weren't satisfied with your production.
Right.
Now we're on to grad school.
I found out the Eastern Montana College here, during my recovery, changed over to the university system and is now Montana State University Billings. And one of the few master's programs it offered was rehabilitation counseling at that time. So that was perfect. I was going to become a rehabilitation counselor. Or try. And, you know, the one I was asked later if I, you know, asked for and used accommodation. And I did to get my GRE. No, it's not GRE. It's the, maybe it is GRE. It's the graduate school test, kind of like the SATs to get into undergrad.
Oh, right. Okay,
anyway,
yeah.
I think it's GREs, and I asked for extra time to take it. And I was given extra time, and I passed enough to get in the program.
Wow.
And I didn't know how I was going to pay for any of this. But Workman's Comp had signed off, and I was at, and this is an important point for any listeners, I was sitting at the Billings support group, which I was just a member of, and I told him my dilemma, and one of the fellow thrivers at the table said, well, what'd Workman's Comp say? Or not Workman's Comp, what'd Voc Rehab say? And I said, what's Voc Rehab? It's Vocational Rehabilitation Service. And you help pay for it as a taxpayer when you're working. So it's not a handout. And they put people with disabilities to work. So I went I made an appointment at the local Voc Rehab office, walked in there, and said, I want to get a master's degree and get trained and become a rehabilitation counselor as a profession. And the counselor looked to me and said, well, Ian, I'm not sure what you've heard, but we don't do that.
Huh?
We don't put people through grad school. You know, we help with undergrad if you need that, or technical college, but not grad school. And I got up. And I started to leave. And thank goodness I stopped at the door. And I turned and I said, well, what do you do? And she said, well, we mutually decide with a consumer what is a very good possibility for success in terms of a change of vocation, and we will train them. And not only train them, we will help place them in that position.
Wow.
And I went back to her desk, and I sat down, and I said, I would like to become a rehabilitation counselor specializing in traumatic brain injury. And she said, we can do that.
Wow.
As long as I didn't mention master's program or grad school, I was in. Now,
isn't that something? For a guy with no executive function, that's pretty incredible.
Well, I had no idea I was going to get that response, but I was confused. I said, well, what do you do? And later on, I have to say, because of some of the problems of me not learning about vocational rehabilitation system when I was basically marched out the door of the hospital and signed off, mm-hmm. no one told me the voc rehab service, what it was or that I would qualify.
Me either.
So
I still don't know.
I got myself appointed to the governor's Vocational Rehabilitation Advisory Council. And I can tell you, in Montana, they guarantee me, because I check on them, they guarantee that a pamphlet about vocational rehabilitation service is in every exit packet of a person with a disability leaving
wow.
the hospital.
So, isn't that something?
It's the kind of thing that has to happen. People that are served by the program also have to find ways to have a voice in the program. And I'm not talking about complaining about it. I'm talking about getting in the decision-making chairs somehow or having a representative of their interests in those council chairs.
Wow. So, you know, I didn't either. I wasn't, because I could walk and talk out of the hospital, I never knew what vocational rehab was either. And I didn't find out until my father was just in the hospital what speech therapy was. I took that literal, you know, and figured it had something to do with your speech, but didn't know that it entailed memory. So like you,
yeah.
I was kind of shuffled through the system and still don't know what all. You're educating me now for the first time about what they do in voc rehab. I didn't know.
Well, it was a lot of guesswork, but I was determined to keep guessing until I got an answer. And I will say that I didn't put on the robe of angry person with a disability. I put on the robe of, well, how can you help me? How can we do this? Because this is what I want to do. And by teaming with whoever the professional is, might be tax preparer or whatever, it becomes, you get a whole different level of cooperation, I've found. And, of course, I have to swallow my pride sometimes, but it really is
sure.
more effective to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in this vocational rehab, one of our other hosts I see is listening online, and I just wondered, he's very big into independent living centers. In fact, he works at an independent living center, and they provide information like what you were just talking about. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also surprised that you had a support group in your area already for brain injuries.
I was real fortunate. It was started in the early 80s by the family members of a college student who received a traumatic brain injury down in Texas, and they had all these services down in Texas. And the father was transferred, his job transferred up to Billings. And when they got here, they realized there wasn't anything like they had down there in terms of support groups or network or services. And his name is Scotty McLeod, and he and his wife, Tice, found another family in another town. And they decided to do something about it, and they formed the Brain Injury Association of Montana, and it was a chapter of the National Association. And it was Scotty that met me when I first showed up at that support group meeting.
And this was the association now, right? Not the alliance hadn't come around yet. This is the association?
Yeah, there wasn't an alliance. It was all association.
Okay, good. Good, because I do want to clarify those. We've been talking a lot lately about the difference, and we didn't have an association or an alliance or anything in my area back when I had mine. Now I understand there's a little branch in the middle of no place of the association, which is kind of odd because we're the largest city in the state and the only hospitals, you know, level one trauma hospitals where you'd be able to get some of those surgeries is here in town. But they strategically placed their association way out there. So I guess because it would be centrally located in the, you know, in the state, but it's just the entire population where I am is bigger than the whole rest of the state. And so, you know, I don't know how that works, but anyway, so go on. So you had an association.
We have geography issues here because that's why when the association started, they had support group in Billings and one on the other side of the state. And because it was such an expansive space in between, and they wanted people to be able to access support group at least once in a while if they could. And when I woke up, there was about six support groups, something like that. And I got so much value out of support groups, and I'm a real advocate for them, that when I was, I found out there was a federal state grant for traumatic brain injury in Montana, had applied and got it, accepted.
Wow.
They were looking for a TBI grant coordinator, project coordinator, and I signed up with the sole, you know, main focus for me was getting more support groups spread out across the state. And we went from six or seven to 18 at the end of the period that I worked, including five reservations where brain injuries are the highest per capita in the state. In some places, at the time, Montana was number one per capita.
Wow.
Now I think we're third.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Huh. That's really amazing. I mean, I just think about that, and I think of here. Now, what do you attribute that to?
Long distance in between towns where people fall asleep. There's a lot of outdoor recreation. People ski and rock climb and that sort of thing without helmets and without safety gear.
Wow.
There's a lot of domestic violence on the reservations where there's a lot of hopelessness and, you know, lack of education and resources.
Mm-hmm.
And it breeds domestic violence issues, and that's another main cause
Wow.
of injuries in this state. And then there's agriculture accidents. A lot of people get kicked by a horse or fall off it or machinery, farm machinery. And so we have a couple different avenues to keep our population coming, and I sincerely hope that our advocacy work in terms of prevention through knowledge and education are starting to take hold, because we are now third instead of first. So I feel like some progress.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first time that becomes good news when you're not number one, right?
Yeah.
My goodness. So you
Long ways
then, Yeah. Oh, God, yes. So you went on to be president, did you not?
Yes. I went to a brain injury conference, and they knew I was pursuing a degree in rehabilitation counseling with traumatic brain injury as my focus, and I was asked to serve on the board. And the next year, they elected me president. So I was not on the board very long.
Wow. But, quick climb to the top.
Quick climb to the top, and then I was done. But I have kept active. And now I'm back on the board. Years later, they invited me back on the board. There's some changes. It's now the Brain Injury Alliance of Montana. And at the time, we were told that support group leaders were told that there can no longer be a formal affiliation with the mothership, the state organization. Although there was support for us in terms of, you know, helping us where the helpline and that sort of thing, there was no formal link. And that really upset me because the state association was started by support groups, local support groups. And it created a lot of bad blood, not just me, but other support group leaders that were felt disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And we're now in the process of getting that all straightened out because they changed the name and some of the board members. And when they invited me back on the board of the Alliance, I said, this is my issue. I've been spending the last 6.5 years developing support groups and telling them to make sure they support the state association or state, you know, offices. And all of a sudden the rug is pulled out from me, in my, you know, from my perspective.
Yeah.
And so there's a healing going on now, and it is taking place. We're coming back under the umbrella.
Great. So initially, and I kind of started to mention this to you last time, not having had any exposure to any of this type of thing myself, that it appeared to me, just as a casual observation, I guess, that, and this might lead me to a quick commercial message, but that the association was big. It looked like it was big on advocacy and awareness, but didn't offer much in the way of peer-to-peer support. And I'm a big believer in peer-to-peer support. There's a place for the professionals, but there's nothing like somebody who's walked in similar moccasins to not make you feel polarized and isolated in that process of recovery. And, I've been kind of watching the chat boards while, you know, the last several months that I've been a host, and in the last year that I've been, getting to meet a lot of other survivors, which I had never met one for 17 mm-hmm. years. It took me writing a book to meet a survivor. And, and I see different people make comments about, you know, the associations are doing an outstanding job with the awareness and advocacy, but there was a big void for people like me, for people that are out in rural areas, just a lot of places around the country where that peer-to-peer support isn't coming from the association. And so my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is were the alliances trying to get more into this?
I believe so.
That's what I was thinking.
That was the incentive. And I knew someone, for example, Jeff Lauer from Iowa, who is very active in the Brain Injury Association in Iowa. And he was one of the first... And he was also on staff for a while at the National Office of the Brain Injury Association of America. And he's one of the first ones that got together and signed on, the Iowa support group signed on as the alliance. They because of that. They want to make sure it does serve the individual needs and the support group needs. And I don't know quite how, I know that was the thought. I've heard from some people that they feel that it's not enough yet, but I think that's certainly, if it's not enough, then I say get involved and change it.
Exactly.
You
and
know?
if you don't mind, I will have a quick commercial in between by saying that I think that was one of the things that Craig was seeing when he started Brain Injury Radio, and it was on one night a week on Monday nights for the last probably going on 3 years now. And I don't know, I lose track of time. I got memory problems like a lot of people in this room. It's been a number of months now, I guess, since we were expanded to 7 nights a week. And I like to tell the people that are listening who haven't been to the show before that all of these programs are archived immediately after they're concluded and available on demand anytime. So, you know, if you're a newcomer out there and you don't have, or you do have, you know, a live support group to go to, you know, there's some places now coming up that fill some of these gaps on a peer-to-peer support level, like Brain Injury Radio, which is on now 7 nights a week. There's 10 different hosts, and it's the same number, same time, every night. They've recently started the peer group support line, and that website is the number 4, P as in Paul, E-E-P as in Paul, 44.org. And we're still looking for some volunteers. Eventually, this line is going to be 24/7. People would need to volunteer only 4 hours a month of their time. The current hours are posted at that website, and if you're interested in either talking to another survivor, you can certainly do that now in the hours that they have. But even more important, I know one of the things that we hosts have found, and I'm sure what you found, Ian, in your involvement in real life in the association peer support groups, is that it is very empowering to be able to be involved with other people. There were, you know, 17 years, I thought that I was crazy in the traditional medical field was helping me feel that way, because they either threw pills at things that didn't fix the problems I was complaining about and caused some new problems for me, or sending me to what I affectionately call the shrink boneyard. And there was nobody to validate the very real shift that had gone inside of my brain and the way that I process, the way that I feel emotions, what I call the full basket syndrome, too many new things coming at me at once, and I'll either melt down or freeze like a deer in the headlights, the short-term memory problems. I almost forgot to mention that one. And, you know, quite a few other things. You know, I got a little laundry list of things that were, you know, gifts left over from my experience, and there was just never anybody to validate those things. And you know, family, right, and the people who were around at the time, it's such a horrific thing for the caregivers and the family from their own side of things, that when you look normal again and you talk normal again, and you and me, at least, I wanted to be normal again because I didn't know what else to be. You get a lot of enablers out there out of ignorance and denial. And I've learned so much in the last several months than I learned in the 17 years prior to that. And I remember when I was first tuning into these shows, hearing people talk, and I said this a couple times, but it just made such a profound effect on me. I felt like a kid getting caught with their hand in the cookie jar. One night Craig was talking, and he used the exact verbiage that had been in my mind, and he said, and then he lived in a world of post-it notes. And I just, the hair on the back of my neck and on my arms stood up, and I felt almost emotional. I was like, oh my God, somebody knows. And now, months later, so many people know, but there's still an awful lot of people that don't. So I really appreciate your efforts, you know, both in the association and the alliance to try to improve, you know, their efficiency. They do a lot of things good, and like any organization or any operation, there's a lot of good, but there's always some fine-tuning that can be done. And I think that that fine-tuning comes most effectively out of a survivor and not a professional or a bureaucrat.
Well, I think there's also, you know, there's people that complain, and it's easy to complain.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want to be effective, it's important to, if you can't handle it yourself, to find someone, an ally, to represent your interests and get your voice heard about whatever it is that's bugging you. And not, you know, it's real easy to stew about it. But that does nothing. And, you know, one thing, I think part of it is I was a political science major as well as a theater major in college. And I began to realize that, you know, it was important to not feel like they, the agency or the government or the whatever, as if they're a separate force. It's our government, it's our agency, because we are
right.
The citizens that created it, and we're the ones to be served by it. So it is our association or our alliance and our support group. And, you know, there's people in my support group occasionally would like to have something differently, and I try to make sure that they feel that things are done differently because of their input. It's really powerful to be able to make a suggestion, see it actually manifest into a reality. So that's part
Absolutely.
Of being a support group leader, I think, is to empower others in the circle.
Yeah, I agree totally, and I appreciate you saying that. I was a business major, and I kind of figured out in the college years, too, that the most effective approach for me anyway is to not buck the system, but to work more effectively within the system to be able to
That's
change
right.
it. And I was glad I learned that lesson pretty early in my life because it served me well. You know, every time you want to fly in the face of something bigger than you, you usually get stomped on like a gnat. But if you go within the system and play by
infiltrate.
The system rules. Yes, you infiltrate. Exactly. Great word for it. Yeah, you infiltrate the system and make things happen within the system. And so it kind of evolves and starts to change. Instead of it being a friction situation, it becomes, at least ideally, it would become a cooperative situation. So
yeah.
that's cool. So let me ask you now about, there's a couple of things that we didn't talk about at all last time. I appreciate your expanding on the associations and the alliances, but one other thing I wanted to, a couple other things I want to talk to you about. One of them is when the survivor slash thriver becomes the caregiver. I'm not going to say anything except the audience has heard me talk a little bit about my family and some of the things that are going on in my family. And I had just got used to dealing with some of my own changes and then seeing how to integrate that, you know, getting the coin flipped, you know, over and learning to be on the other side of that that coin, and I know that you're in that situation too. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that's been for you? Do you feel like your injury has had any effect on your role getting switched?
Well, I can say the injury has really given me an upgraded level of compassion, and for those that are not doing as well. And that's an important ingredient in terms of caregiving, too. My mother has advanced Alzheimer's, and I'm caregiver for her now here in my home. I realize that she's blind as a result. It's a symptom of the Alzheimer's. Her eyes are fine, but they're not registering.
Wow.
And early on in her, where we start noticing the memory loss starting slowly but surely, I was really equipped because I've been through brain injury rehabilitation about some of the tools and techniques to help. You know, I don't have a good memory, short-term memory, but mm-hmm. I use the tools, and I was able to pass on some of those tools to Mother, and not only pass them on, but check on her once in a while, make sure she's using them, like a day timer type thing.
Right.
Early on, and scheduling things. And it really, that knowledge and ability to help her was increased because of my having the brain injury disability. And that's why I always felt pursuing rehabilitation counseling was really a really good thing for me to be doing, because
absolutely,
I walked in the room, especially out on the tribal lands here, and the population is genuinely suspicious of people from the outside coming in to tell them what to do, especially if they're affiliated with the government in some way.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
and if they're non-native, which,
right.
you know, I got in front of them and said, well, I'm of the Elliot tribe. We call them clans in Scotland.
Yes.
And
we
wear our tartans, and you wear your feathers, you know, in your various colors. But I share something that half of you in the room cannot, and that is that I've had a very serious brain injury, and it's a lifelong recovery process.
Right.
And mm-hmm. as soon as I was admitting that, right from the get-go, the level of trust was amazing, and really positive. I ended up facilitating a national Native American Brain Injury Conference here in Billings.
Wow.
Just a couple of years ago. And remember I said that the night before my accident I had Joe Firecrow playing?
Yes.
Well, I was able to bring him to the brain injury grantee meeting in Washington, D.C. And these people that were, you know, genuine, most of them were administrators, grant administrators, government folks, and
mm-hmm.
they came out of the elevator in this fairly swanky hotel in D.C., and they hear they're greeted with this soothing music of native flute, and they walk in, the room lights were darkened, and we had really made efforts to give them a native experience. I'll touch on it, that if you want to start connecting with native population, and there's a lot of brain injuries across the country, you need to
yes.
find out what their culture values and how they operate. And each tribe is different, but
yes.
They do have some similarities. And to learn
yes.
those is important. The fact you're bothering to learn, to even try
right.
to learn, is a real important step in gaining trust.
Right. all through my high school and college, back in the days where it was popular, I worked at an Indian jewelry store. Remember, well, in your area, I bet everything circles back around, but back in the 80s, you know, it was a huge Native American jewelry, and I worked, 7-8 years in the store, and had the opportunity. We've got a few tribes around our area, and I know about the conditions that you speak of and the traditions that you speak of, and that trust, well, in any new relationship, but particularly with other cultures, and like you said, the old feelings, getting past that and learning to communicate and gain that trust is huge. So that's wonderful.
And it really helps when you first start saying, I'm not here to tell you anything, I'm here to listen. And then if there's things that I feel I can be of service to you in some way, or, you know, give you information about how to get a certain grant source or whatever, or a strategy for your physical well-being, diet, or anything like that, then I'll speak up. But I start the interaction by listening, and that's a real powerful tool in gaining trust, too, because everybody likes to be listened to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Tell me a little bit. Last night, our Tuesday host, Les Paul, had an author on, and their son had yes, Jenny, I see you out there in the chat room. Somebody in the chat room just typed it in the H-bot. He was talking about, it was kind of funny because you and I had started talking about it, and then our show got interrupted, last night this gentleman, the gentleman's son, had a TBI, and he was talking about, he wrote a book on some alternative types of treatment, and there were two that his son has really responded to favorably, and one of them was cranial sacral work, which I get done, and the other was the H-bot. So tell me how you got into that, and then is what you have called a soft H-bot?
I guess, or it's a portable.
Okay, it's, yeah, then I think he referred to that one of them hard and one of them soft. I think that's what he meant. But tell me how you got interested, or how you became aware, or whatever, your process about the H-bot, how you came to know about it. And then I wanted to ask you, just for my own personal reasons and about your mother, just about that therapy in general, I guess, a little bit, how you got turned on to it, and then obviously it must have worked for you to purchase a unit and offer those services to others at a lower price. Obviously insurance doesn't pay for that.
I didn't purchase it. I used a unit which was purchased by a neurologist, I guess, and at the time, a little ahead of his time. In fact, he got it when there wasn't anything like that around in Billings, despite it having two significant hospitals serving the region. And he purchased it and started using it for neurological conditions. And up till then, hyperbaric oxygen primarily was used for pressures in the brain that are caused by deep sea divers coming up too fast, that kind of thing. And so there's a whole new level of use for hyperbaric, including brain injury. And I went down to I was fortunate enough to go down as Montana's representative to a conference on brain injury that I went to a workshop where Dr. Richard Neubauer was the speaker, presenter, and he did a whole presentation on hyperbaric oxygen. He wrote a book along with another co-author named Morton Walker, DPM, and it's called Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy. And in that book, it's very specific as to areas that HIBOT, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, can help with and things it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on research. These guys, you know, they're John Hopkins University or John Hopkins Medical Center and that kind of stellar credentials. And he pointed out, he said, you're going to hear from a lot of traditional medicine folks that there's just not enough evidence and to say that to verify this is a good therapy, an effective
mm-hmm.
one. And I'm here to tell you that it's been thoroughly researched, and you can check the index of this book and
yeah.
the pages of it. And it does have some amazing effective results for certain people. And there's no
why do you think they don't?
Therapy.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Why do you think they don't?
Pointed out, he said it's hard to sell oxygen.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
it's much better if you could sell a drug. But that's why, you know, it's not being promoted enough by hospitals,
right.
although they're starting
right.
to catch on. The
exactly.
hospital here
that's
charges $1,200 a session.
Oh, my goodness.
We charge out at a naturopathic clinic for this portable unit. We charge $75 a session, or $60 if you're on fixed income.
Wow, what a wonderful opportunity that is. Big difference between $1,200, huh? Because insurance
yeah.
really doesn't cover this, even if you can find a doctor who will prescribe this, which I haven't been able to find a doctor that will prescribe this. And my dad has Parkinson's, and I've wondered not only for myself, but, you know, with the disease like, as you know, with a couple of these diseases that are progressive, you know, you'd sure like to be able to try that.
Right.
I mean, it can't
right.
hurt.
Exactly. And I think
yeah.
the internet is a possible tool to find oxygen therapy that's more affordable. Because the units are, the permanent units, like they have at the hospital, are chrome and glass, you know, and they look, they're like the Cadillac version of a chamber. But basically,
sure.
all this is an airtight chamber with valves on it that has pumps for the oxygen, enriched oxygen to come in and pressures to be released. Ours was an older model, but it does the same thing. It's airtight. It has all the gauges on it, and I first received it because the naturopath doctor, I heard this Neubauer talk about it, and I learned that this naturopathic clinic had access to one, although it was up in the doctor's cabin.
Oh,
sitting
gosh.
There. So I came and asked if she would have it brought down or whatever, what would it take to get it? And she brought it down, and I received complimentary treatments, mind you, with the idea
wow.
that if I could sense there was an improvement, that I could develop a clientele among the brain injury community here. And
I see.
I received a couple of unsolicited comments after about 15 treatments where, like my supervisor at the university, Montana Center on Disabilities, where I was working, said, Ian, you didn't bring your day timer. I call it the brain book. You didn't bring it with you this morning. And I said, no. And she said, I don't think you've missed an appointment yet, have you? And I said, no. And she said, you know, every time I saw you come in without that day timer, I'd have to send you back home. Because otherwise you'd be bouncing off the walls.
Oh.
You know, phone calls and missed appointments and stuff. And she looked at me in the eye and said, I think that hyperbaric oxygen is doing you some good. And she was just as surprised as anybody. So
wow.
when you get comments like that that are unsolicited, you start paying attention.
Absolutely.
So I told the naturopathic doctor who was doing acupuncture and a lot of other things that I would like to train to be able to give these treatments to others in my support group and all across state, whoever wanted to get them. So I just gave hyperbaric oxygen in January, February, 5 days a week, two times a day, to a little 2.5-year-old girl, and her mother was in the chamber with her. And we did that for 6 weeks. And for various reasons, the mother who lived out, they live a ways outside the city here, they're a couple hours drive. But she called me up after a couple weeks and said, you know what, we're getting so much feedback on my little girl's facial expressions and alertness, and that we definitely want to keep this going. So I'm going to bring her in anytime I come to Billings. I want to bring her over and have a treatment. I said, that'd be great.
Isn't that great? That's just wonderful. Well, I'd like to look into that, especially, you know, we had talked about it, and then Les Paul's guest last night was talking about it, and I want to look into that a little more in earnest in our area and see if there's anything like that going on. Let me take a look. Go on.
I'd like to bring up one more thing.
Please.
Especially, it's approach to dealing with feeling impoverished, which we all do when we suddenly are on disability income.
Right.
And you're broke, and you feel like you're never going to get out of it. And I was in that same boat, and I was also broken somewhat. But early on in my recovery, I got the notion that I didn't want to keep... Well, I had a doorbell ring, and I opened it up, and it was a Girl Scout trying to sell me cookies. And I said, I'm sorry I'm on disability, and I just don't have the money right now. And I shut the door, and I felt so bad and so broke. And I thought, you know, we're talking about cookies. I should have a couple bucks laying around that I could do, you know, buy some cookies.
Yeah, sure.
And then I thought more, and I started going, what if I just somehow figure out saving a dollar a day, and I only use it, that fund, I borrow from it to buy cookies at the door, that kind of thing, magazines, whatever. But it cannot be spent on anything that's a basic need, like electric bill or something. It has to be on something fun. And they call my fun fund. And I had to pay it back within the week that I borrowed from it. And by the end of the year, I had $365 plus change. And I had to the rule was I had to blow it in the week, the following week. So I started out my new year, the next year, with a jacuzzi suite, with a gourmet meal, with a gourmet breakfast and dinner. And I even had money to give to my distant cousins for $5 each for Christmas, or, you know, it was a New Year's present, I think. And then I even donated to my college for the first time.
Wow.
And just knowing that I did that changed my whole perspective on myself as a person who's a person of means. How can I feel poor if I stayed in a king-size bed in a jacuzzi suite? and it just really changed my attitude. And then I went to $2 a day. So I figured I can find $2 somewhere. I haven't stolen any of it. But I was able to go for the first time, pay the airfare to go to Italy and Germany and Mexico.
Jeez Louise.
A couple different years. And I could not feel broke after doing that, and I had my eyes open to international travel. And then this past year, I've been caring for my mother, and I also realized I haven't gone anywhere, and I realized I didn't have my fun fund working for me. I quit doing it. So I started in January of this year my $3 a day fund, and basically $100 a month.
Yeah.
And I now have $400.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
To spend anyway. I was
It took me out of that feeling sorry for myself and feeling.
Yeah.
It's easy to do because we have been hurt, and if we keep trying to compare ourselves with how we were, we're going to get depressed.
Right.
But we also have to look at what things are we doing now that we couldn't do before, and one for me is compassion.
Yes.
And I know that the handicapped parking, I don't resent it anymore.
No.
And I don't use it. But at a time when I was in a wheelchair, I did need it, and I did appreciate having it, and I protect it. Now,
right.
Whenever I look around. So it's just things like that that really have given me a better quality of life than I really thought I'd achieve later on.
Well, and you hit on an important point, too. You know, I grew up, my career for 25 years was as a financial consultant, and I grew up with it around the dinner table as well. And one of the big basics is to pay yourself first. You treat yourself just like one of the bills that you get, and you always put a percentage that varies depending on which one of us you ask. But yeah, you pay yourself every time you pay a bill. You put a little in, you know, in the Kim fund or in the Ian fund, and before you know it, that truly adds up, and it does empower you. And that's one of the things for me that I had a dramatic change in my lifestyle when I went from career to disability. But I did know how to be fiscally responsible and to pay myself first. And so I was very fortunate that I had that, you know, that attitude or those notions drilled into me as a child, and then went on to work in the industry for 25 years and counseled people to do that. And so that part of me didn't change afterward. It's just the Kim Fund isn't quite as big as it used to be, but I still feel good about what you were saying. You know, I feel good about the fact that, you know, I am getting the bills paid, and I am saving money, and maybe not as quick or as much as I used to, but I'm grateful that I'm able to at all. And those are the rewards, you know. Somebody in the chat room just said they have a piggy bank, and yeah, whatever it is, you know, the one thing I've found is that a lot of things can really snowball, you know. So maybe you've got some physical residuals after your episode, and maybe you've got some mental ones, and then, you know, some attitudinal ones come out of that, and then relationships are affected, and, you know, the snowball can get rolling out of control. And there's some things like that, simple things like that that you brought up that can really help, you know, talk to other survivors, get out of yourself and into others, pay yourself just like you're one of your other creditors. There's a lot of pretty simple things that we overlook a lot of times that can make our life a lot easier and that make us feel more empowered, because that's one of the things I think a lot of us wrestle with. If we had a substantial career and we suddenly have that drastic change, is feeling less than or feeling like we failed because we got sick, which is really sad, you know, that you would feel that way because you got sick. It's not like you did anything wrong, you know, that changed your circumstance. But, you know, inch by inch, you can get that back by just readjusting your perceptions. I call it putting on a new pair of glasses. And things can look a lot differently. And so I think we all go through our own fashion of grief process in our own time. And, you know, but there's no need to stay there. And Ian, I've got to go to some of the callers. We've had them stacked up, and last time we didn't get to have the callers in. So if you don't mind, actually what I'm going to do, callers, queue up your, well, I'm going to take a couple calls first, and then I'm going to do something before the show ends that you and I planned on. So let me, I guess I won't unmute Keith Anthony yet. We'll see if he can respond and do that extension we were talking about there in the chat room, if you can work on that. But area code 803, Les Paul, and this is the gentleman, Ian, that is our Tuesday night host who had the author on talking about the hyperbaric last night. Les Paul,
right.
Did you have a
Hello.
Question for Ian?
Well, it's question and answer and everything in between. I was listening to you talking about associations and alliances. I work at an independent living center called Walton Options, and I just find it amazing that we employ four traumatic brain injury survivors in an office of only six or seven people, and that's just one of our offices. We have other offices with some TBI survivors there. And yet the associations, for the most part, and I like the associations, they have their mission, but it needs to be more survivor-based. I feel like they've got it down on certain levels, but they need to work harder to work with the survivors. And I was listening to some of the things you were saying, and I would just love to see that happen more on a level that where people with that are actually the survivors, where they come to us and say, hey, what do you think about this? You actually live this day to day. It's not only in your head, it's in your heart, because you breathe it, you live it, and you die it. Day to day, people are living and dying with traumatic brain injury. And, I mean, I've been working now for 13 years for Walton Options for Independent Living, and I'm one of the very few people I know with traumatic brain injury employed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was taking a tour down to visit my sister in Salt Lake City, and she said, Ian, I want to have a week where you're just not going to say no. You're going to let me take you to various therapies, and we're going to try them, including, and they included cranial sacral and a out-of-body experience and a sensory deprivation tank and all kinds of things. But part of my visit down there is I dropped in on the Brain Injury Association of Utah. And I met the director, Ron Roscoe's, and we were talking and this and that, and he was showing me they have a connection with vocational rehab down there, and four or five of the clients, voc rehab clients, all have brain injuries, and they're all producing work for the Brain Injury Association of Utah at that time. And I thought, wow, that's just fabulous. And then we were kind of dancing around each other, and then verbally, and then I said, well, I probably should tell you, I sustained a brain injury back in 94, and he looks at me and said, I had a brain injury too. And we went for almost 45 minutes, neither of us disclosing that we had brain injury, because we thought it might affect what the other person would think about us. And stuff.
Okay.
And we were just both laughed pretty hard about that one. But the point is that at least in that incident, and I hope we could get it going here, the brain injury state office is being staffed by persons with brain injury as part of their vocational rehab process, and it makes perfect sense. You know,
do they have paying jobs for them at all, or
yeah.
are they volunteering, or okay, well, I'll just tell, I'm not talking bad about our vocational rehabilitation center here. They did get me Everybody knows I talked about a smart pen that they got me and everything, but it took me years of complaining to get any kind of services, and yet people that I know that had and I have nothing against any type of disability, but people I know that are in chairs, for example, would get $10,000 and $15,000 equipment, and yet that pen was all they could give me, and they actually handed me a paper, and this was just a few months ago, and said, okay, did you like your pen? I said, it's all right, but I was planning on something a bit more techie than that, like a computer with some software on it, and they said, no, this is all you get. We need you to say you liked it. They told me what to say. And that was vocational rehabilitation. They told me verbatim what to say, and I wrote different than what they said, and I filled it in.
Good for you.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, but I didn't appreciate the way I was pushed in. And by the way, I went to the vocational rehabilitation office, and it was like dead silence in there. A beautiful building, about 15 employees, and they would move back and forth. But I sat there 3 hours, and my girlfriend has a brain injury also. And when we sat in there, I said, Andrea, I want you to get a look at this place. And she said, why? I said, I just want you to look at it. There were people cutting the grass. There were people going back and forth pushing papers and not talking and things. And while we sat there, we never saw one single person other than us two come in. And that's how it was. And I was just startled by that. And it was like that the previous time I went there.
Well, you know, their funding is going to be tied to that. That's the thing about government agencies. They do have to produce the numbers. That's why they wanted you to sign that slip of paper.
I could tell very much.
And I learned that the squeaky wheel gets the grease in those agencies sometimes. And we have the excuse that we say, well, I may be rude, but, you know, I have a brain injury. I have lack of cognitive inhibition. And
to
use it as your tool. Say,
to
I have lack
pen,
of
I
cognitive inhibition.
I'm sorry. To get the pen I talked about, which is a smart pen, I kept calling my counselor and I would not get a return call. And I mean, over a period of about 4 months, not one single return call. And I kept leaving messages. Finally, I get a call and said, your case has been closed for 6 years. And I said,
oh my God.
It was never. I said, 6 years? I said, I never got anything. You didn't do anything. It says your case was closed. That's all they could tell me. And so they've got what's called.
Time to reopen it.
Well, I did try that, and they wouldn't do it. So I came back one more time, a third time, because they didn't open it again after they said they would. And I said, they've got a counselor. I can't think of the term when they don't have one on call, your regular counselor. I said, I want to see the counselor that you see when there's not anybody to see. I need to see them. I'm here. I want to file a complaint also. And so I sat down, and she said, well, what's wrong, Mr. Morgan? I said, well, so far no one has done anything except push papers back and forth for me. I don't like complaining. I don't normally complain. But now it was 6 months later, by the way. I said, nothing has been done. I've been told my case has been closed. They opened it that day, and that's when I got that pen. And at least they did that. But, I mean, like you said, the squeaky wheel never gets the grease unless you get going. And I did win. It's funny you say that. I won the Squeaky Wheel Advocacy Award for the state of South Carolina for that kind of thing one time. And so my wheels go squeaky.
Well, it's unfortunate you have to do all that, but, you know, whatever you have to do, because each state at each office is different. A lot of times they don't like the fact that you have every right. The vocational rehab system is set up so it's client-centered. Not necessarily in practice, but in principle. And all you have to do is refer them to that principal and say, I need to have a different counselor. This one is not meeting my needs, and I'm going to stay here until I get one.
Yes.
You know? Because
yes, exactly.
It is. They are legally responsible to adhere to client-centered process.
Well, if I could just say one more thing, and if I can't, I understand. But I was typing on the message board a while ago. I'm on the board of the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina and Georgia, and I like them both very much. But like people were talking about, I work at Walton Options for Independent Living. We have 4 employees that have brain injuries, and they don't even have that many in any of the associations here. And I would just love to see a survivor-based employment system for them to help make sure that it stays, what's the word I'm looking for, accountable. That's what I was looking for. Because the survivor has it in his heart. I hear it in your heart hearing you talk. You're awesome, by the way. I love hearing what you said tonight, I mean. But I meet a lot of people in my support groups and in the Brain Injury Association of Georgia and South Carolina that are very hopeless because they've waited 20 and 30 years and had no services that are mean anything.
Well, by law, and this is part of my, you know, getting a master's in rehab counseling, I began to learn more about my rights as a person with a disability, I began to realize, God, I wish I'd known that back then. Well, one of the
things is
that the majority of the advisory council to that government agency, the vocational rehab agency, has to be, by law, over 50% made up of persons with disabilities.
Okay.
So
that's
the voice right there.
Yeah, that's good.
Find out who's on that advisory council. And that's like a governor-appointed council.
That's kind of like Walton Options where I work. It has to be a minimum of 51% of people with disabilities
employed,
and it's more like 85 or 90%.
Well, it is why you have more people working at your place than some of these other places you mentioned. Because you have people with disabilities making sure that happens.
Yes.
Now, I would just really play, you know, don't give up on the system. Learn how it works and learn how to
work
it.
That's what I tell people, yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, pleasure hearing about it.
Yeah, Les Paul, thanks. Stick around. I wanted to take people in order. Keith Anthony was doing me a favor with the clock, so I don't want to unmute his mic if he's in the middle of doing something, and I guess he can't tell me in the chat. So I'm gonna go ahead. Thank you, Frank. Ian, this is Fantastic Frank, and he's our Thursday night host. Frank, do you have a comment for us? Good to hear you.
Yes, do. Hi, Ian. Thank you for telling me about the hyperbaric chamber. I met Dr. Richard Nuremberger, and he's in Lauderdale, Florida, by the sea, right?
Well, he wasn't at the time when I met him. He was at
seven or eight years ago.
Okay.
And it cost me $1,500 to be in his chamber for a half an hour or something like that. And I was convinced that he could help me. I came back to Rochester, New York. I showed this data to my doctor. My doctor couldn't see any difference. I was denied coverage under my medical plan. I found a doctor down in Buffalo, which is 50 miles from here. I went down to see him. He had a hyperbaric chamber, and he couldn't see any difference, and they denied me saying that. And my question to you is, would this still help me when I got oxygen deprived by being trapped in a fire 33 years ago? Do you think that this would still help me?
I would think so. I really would. It's helped
Can
people.
I come out and use
example.
Results?
Yeah,
I'd love to come out and meet you and do use your facility for a week or a month or however long it's going to take to get my life back.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I know it's back exactly what it was. However, I'd do anything. I was willing to give up everything when the doctor said I was willing to spend $1,500, that was 10 years ago, to go down to Florida and be in his, he had a facility that was going to cost, I don't know, $100 or $200 a day to be down there for a month. It was going to cost me about $50,000. I was ready to do that until I couldn't get any medical support here in town. My Blue Cross and Blue Shield wasn't going to pay for any of that.
I don't think insurance traditionally does pay for any of that. They consider that experimental treatment still.
Well, that's
pay
what
for
happens.
For certain things. Like, they'll pay for it for certain things, like toxicity or the bed or things like that. But, you know, there's a real strict list right now that we still got to advocate to expand that list of symptoms that they'll include. But they do some of it.
Well, and Frank would probably apply for that. Frank's might then because of his circumstances. So
was trapped in a fire. I almost died from carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah.
And I
did you have a doctor prescribe, give you a prescription?
For hyperbaric?
Yeah.
No, I took that upon myself. I flew down. My doctor didn't want to do that. And this doctor has now died, but I have a new doctor who I think he prescribed that for me if I twisted his arm a bit. I asked him nicely.
I would do that because the prescription, the thing with the whole medical industry, if you have a doctor's okay, and this goes with a lot of funding from government and other things, if you have a government, you know, a doctor's prescription, that gives you a lot more power to get what you want.
Absolutely. Yeah, without
otherwise,
it, the insurance companies
with a brain
wouldn't.
Injury that,
has
this far out idea.
Well,
right.
I've been told by a number of people here in Rochester that they couldn't see any difference between the before and after pictures. I was in there, I think I was in there for 2.5 hours or 3 hours or something like that. And they couldn't even see any difference. I couldn't see a difference. And I got very mad at the doctor who was saying he couldn't see any difference. And I felt great when I came out of there. That was 10 years ago. And mm-hmm. I felt like I regained some of my life by doing that. But
I would strongly suggest you get the book Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy by Richard Neubauer. And it even has pictures of brain scans where they did a SPECT scan of brain injury patients, and it shows the damage, and it shows pre and post, and you can see remarkable differences. But it won't happen with the 2 or 3 treatments. It's going to be a lot more than that.
Yeah, he was talking about that little girl who was doing it for 6 weeks. So, and, you know, you got to remember, too, that he, you know, Ian is a rehab counselor. He's not a doctor. He did put that disclaimer on, like any other thing, you know, cranial, sacral, or any treatment. You know, sometimes it works for people and sometimes it doesn't. It kind of depends on the individual and what they've got going on. But I sure think it would be worth a try, Frank, because it seems like that's a very promising frontier that's underused right now, and your insurance might even pay for it because of your circumstances. So get a prescription from that doctor because the insurance definitely won't pay for it if it isn't medically prescribed by a traditional doctor, but I'd get on them like that and give it a try again. It's like I said earlier, it can't hurt, you know, it can only help, but there's nothing about it that can hurt you like with prescription drugs and some of the other things that get tossed at us. You know, oxygen isn't going to hurt you, and if you felt good even after that few sessions, that's a very promising outcome.
And they were very specific. It will not help my mother's Alzheimer's because Alzheimer's, it's damaged cells that it helps rejuvenate. And not dead cells, but if they're damaged, then they start coming coming back with the oxygen, intense oxygen that's pressurized. The reason Alzheimer's is caused by lack of blood flow and to the brain. And so her eyes are fine, for example. If you test her eyes by themselves, they're fine, but she can't see, she can't register because the neurons are not firing off the cognition, you know, spot. So that's one thing that I was real disappointed in, but they're real clear about what it will help and what it won't help. And I think it's poisoning, it helps. Well, do we got a couple of minutes I could read? Because it helps multiple sclerosis and all kinds of things. Can I read this just paragraph? We've got time to do that, Kim?
Yeah, if you want. Now, Kim is a host. I really can't
okay.
say.
Well, I'll go ahead and read it.
Okay.
It won't take long. It's right on the back of his book, Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy. Safe and painless, HiBot uses pressurized oxygen administered in special chambers. It has been used for years to treat divers with the bends, a serious illness caused by overly rapid ascensions. As time has gone on, however, doctors have discovered other applications for this remarkable treatment. In Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy, the book, the two authors show how people just like you are finding relief through the use of HiBot. They explain how this treatment overcomes hypoxia or oxygen starvation in the tissues by flooding the body's fluids with life-giving oxygen. In this way, HiBot can help people with strokes, head and spinal cord injuries, and multiple sclerosis regain speech and mobility. When used to treat accident and fire victims, HiBot can promote the faster, cleaner healing of wounds and burns and can aid those overcome with smoke inhalation. It can be used to treat other types of injuries, including damage caused by radiation treatment and skin surgery and fractures that won't heal. HiBot can also help people overcome a variety of serious infections ranging from AIDS to Lyme disease. And as Dr. Neubauer and Dr. Walker point out, it can do all this by working hand-in-hand with other treatments, including surgery, without creating additional side effects and complications. So it's not necessarily the end-all, be-all, but it is a really important tool to have in the toolbox in terms of recovery for a lot of these disorders. And I would strongly recommend you get the book, Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy, that's the name of it, from your library or library loan or buy it at a bookstore and check it out.
I'm trying to buy it right now from Amazon.com, but I apparently have forgotten my email address or something like that. It's not even taking it. I'm going to have to figure out what my... I might have changed my email address or something like that. But I will get this.
Yeah. I've loaned this book out numerous times to people, and then after reading it, they come to me and say, you know, I want to give it a try. And you were right. Dr. Niebauer was medical director of the Ocean Hyperbaric Center in Lauderdale by the Sea, Florida. So you're right about that. When I saw
I think I met him there five or this had to be 6 or 7 years ago. I can't remember
guy.
Where it was, but it was. I had attended a Tony Robbins event down in Florida, and there was a guy there who I met at the. I think it was either a girl or a woman I met at the convention, and she told me about this guy, Dr. Richard Neubauer, and I stayed down there 3 or 4 or 5 extra days to meet him, and he was amazing, and I went there, I was there 2 or 3 days, I can't remember, it wasn't 5 or 10, it was 2 or 3 days, and that was costing me, I don't know, $1,000 an hour or something like that. I came back home. I tried to apply it to I got some of the best medical insurance in the country here with Blue Cross. They paid for, I think we were on $250 of this $2,000 thing, which was nothing. But then I went to my doctor. I showed these pictures to her. She said she couldn't see any difference, and she wouldn't sign off. Then I met this other doctor out in Buffalo maybe a year later. I took him out to him. He said he couldn't see any changes in the pictures, and he wouldn't recommend them for me either. But I think you're right. It has to be longer than 2 or 3 visits, right?
Absolutely.
And
yeah, that's going to take
some
time.
Even Mayo Clinic and places are using it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay.
The really high-end hospitals are now using it. They're starting to get convinced.
I'd give it a try if you're able, Frank. In that book, just keep up your deal on Amazon. And if you lost it, DJ typed the link again into the chat room and just write down the name of the book until you figure out your username and password. And it sounds like you're a great candidate to try that. So I think like anything else, it's just going to take a little bit longer. And as far as what the doctors say, you know, what shows up on the film and the way you feel, I keyed in on what you said about the way you felt in just a few visits. And that's probably more important than what they show on their film, you know?
And that, you know, that my hands, they kind of move uncontrollably because of what happened to me. And that when I got out of there, my handwriting was better than it was when I first went in there. And I'd love to have my handwriting back, if nothing else. But,
yeah.
Sure. Well, try it out, Frank. I got a couple other callers. Do you mind if I bring you back?
No, that's okay. You can bring me back. Thank you, Kim.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. And I'm glad that you called in. It sounds like you'd be a wonderful candidate for this, and I'd honey up to that doctor and get him to write that prescription for you to try it out. Our next is one of our Saturday night hosts, and this is Keith Anthony calling all the way from Croydon, England, and he helped extend the show a few minutes for us so that we could get these questions in and then do our surprise at the end. Keith Anthony, are you with us? Keith Anthony, are you there? Okay, I tell you what. If one of you in the chat room wouldn't mind telling Keith Anthony that
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay, sorry. I thought maybe you had stepped away for a moment.
I was muted to hide the typing because I've been doing a lot of typing on your show, and I'm producing my own show, which is going out in about 5 hours' time. I've not been to bed for 3 days. I had a migraine as well.
God,
man,
I've been missing this show too because I've been frantically working in the background trying to sort out Blog Talk Radio, and I'm having trouble with Dropbox as well on my other show, which is no fun.
Boy, there's really something going on out there these days. We were very fortunate tonight. Ian, I was scared to death because Friday and Saturday, there were problems. It started with our show last Wednesday. It's international hacking scheme, and it just happened to start Wednesday night on our show, but then it continued on to Thursday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday shows came off fine. We were all breathing a sigh of relief, and then Les Paul had issues last night, so I was really nervous and scared to death coming into this show, and Keith Anthony was kind enough to sign in as a co-host help me out a little bit in case we had system problems, but we didn't.
I've been thinking while I've been listening with what I have caught that a lot of us on this show have been told that we're kaput, haven't we?
Yes.
And I'm thinking perhaps we should start up our own club and call it Duffers Get On Top or something.
Yeah. yeah.
Keith,
I thought of that,
you
Ian,
mentioned
when you said it.
Keith, you mentioned you had migraines?
Yes.
I wanted to mention that in this hyperbaric oxygen book called Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy, that migraine headaches are definitely symptoms that can be relieved to a great extent through treatment with the chamber, hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're right, but the problem is that getting that done in England, they're just, if you say that you want to have hyperbaric for migraines, they're going to laugh you out of the place. I've been into hospital with bad migraines saying, I think I'm having an aneurysm or something, and they kick you out. They're just not interested. They don't care if you die over here. It's that bad. To give you an idea of the standards, I had a blood test done some years ago, and I sat down with this young lady, and the blood test was being done in the waiting room because they were so busy, so they made a table inside the waiting room with all the people waiting, watching somebody doing the... So it's very unhygienic to start with because everybody's breathing on you. And she looked very worried. I said, are you okay? She said, I'm very nervous. I said, really? Why is that? She said, because you'll be my first. And I sat there talking to her. I said, but what do you mean the first? She said, well, up until now, I've only done this on an orange. I said, you're joking. There is nowhere on this planet where you learn how to do a blood test without being supervised and doing it on a human. But she assured me that she'd only done it on an orange, and she was frightened she was going to hurt me. And I'm a hypnotist, fortunately, so I had to calm her down, relax her, and try not to panic myself, because I'm not particularly keen on blood tests. And this is the kind of thing that goes on in our hospitals, you know. They're letting somebody stick a needle in you unsupervised, and all she's ever done this on before is an orange. And she's so nervous that she couldn't keep her hand still. And I had to relax her and calm her down.
I'm glad to hear it's not just the United States that has these problems.
Yeah.
We're following in the shoes of England. I'm sorry, Keith Anthony. Our healthcare system is trying to go that direction, and that's kind of a scary thing.
I've been to the doctor in the hospital, and I pray for this. Thanks for that comment, Les Paul, that enjoyed my show. I'll be doing another one at 11 o'clock British Standard Time, which is in about 5 or 6 hours from now, I think. And that'll be a two-hour show. So I'll be doing the Red and the Blue album, Les Paul, if you're up. That'll be about 6 a.m. your time, I think. But what was I saying? In the hospitals, yes. I went to the hospital with the doctor because, and I'm not going to do this, I am not the suicidal type, but because I'm epileptic, it's very common that people with epilepsy have suicidal thoughts. So I went along to the doctor to mention this to her, and she sent me off to this place 6 weeks' time. I waited 6 weeks, and eventually went to this center, and I had a 17-year-old girl met me, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with 17-year-old girls, but she gave me this standard photocopied questionnaire to fill in. I filled in the questionnaire, she thanked me and said goodbye. That was it. So as far as they know, I could be dead now. I didn't get any help with that at all. And, you know, a lot of people commit suicide who have epilepsy, and I'm sure that there's plenty of head-injured people who are committing suicide too, because not because they're crazy, but because things get on top of them, that they need some support, they need to tell somebody.
Exactly.
But you know, this is the kind of, I mean, we talk about it all the time. We don't get the kind of support that we need as brain-injured people. But in England, you don't get the support you need as any kind of a person with doctors and hospitals. That's why my local hospital has got such a bad reputation, because they kill, literally. So many of their patients die. So many people go in for one condition, and they get a disease, like MRSA or something, and they get limbs and things cut off because of it. And this is caused by infection that wouldn't be in that hospital if they only spent the money to keep it clean. You know, all they need is a broom, in effect, or a vacuum cleaner or something would make a big difference. But
well, I would hope they do that at least.
Yeah, no room service at all.
Is there a research hospital near you?
Well, that is a university hospital that I'm talking about.
I'm not going to let go of this idea of migraine and headaches being relieved of symptoms with hyperbaric oxygen, because they said it relief of symptoms occurs as quickly as 5 minutes after the migraine patient starts to breathe pure oxygen.
Yes.
At between 1.7 atmospheres absolute. That's within 5 minutes. That's for a migraine headache. And it makes total sense if you know the migraines are vascular headaches caused by changes in blood flow to and within the brain. And that's exactly what the hyperbaric oxygen helps with. They know it about getting the bends. They know exactly what it does. And that's why if you really understand migraine headaches, you understand why HiBot is a really easy way to go.
I think it's
research too. It can be proven.
Well, I don't doubt it for a second. I would love to have it done, but there's no way anybody over here who's got a doctor's coat on is going to let me have it.
Check with the military hospitals.
Yeah,
military
that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. They seem to have all the money in this country.
And we have a lot of hosts. Keith Anthony's not the only one. I suffer from migraines. Les Paul suffers from horrible migraines. So it sounds like a lot of us here would be eligible if we get the doctor to prescribe that. Sorry?
Because administered oxygen constricts the blood vessels while oxygenating the tissues, HiBot can reduce swelling by as much as 50%. This aborts the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And in a study given to 26 patients who had migraine, headache, pain, pressures between 1.3 and 2.4 atmospheres absolute were used in a multiple chamber. All but one patient obtained complete relief of migraine symptoms within minutes of exposure, including two patients who had temporary paralysis on one side of the face before HiBot treatment. That's right out of the book.
God, that's just really wonderful.
Just to confirm with you again, do you actually need to have a migraine before you go in, or do you go in whether you have one or not and it works anyway? Stops you getting them.
I imagine just going in, you're going to have some cognition firing improvement, but it won't happen. Normally, you don't have a positive result until quite a few of these treatments occur, 10 to 20 before you notice anything. But in the case of migraines, they're saying within minutes you'll notice a difference because of the whole physiology of how migraines occur and what causes them is the blood flow. And that's exactly what this hyperbaric oxygen will deal with. Even an oxygen bar, I'd think, would help.
Yeah.
Now, that's an idea, too. I've seen in a couple of high-rent magazines, catalogs, where they've got those. But that's really encouraging, too, because I know Keith Anthony, Les Paul, and myself have suffered dismally from those headaches. It really makes it hard. You know, when we were talking earlier about, the depression and the down part, the grieving part as you're going through the process of recovery. And one thing I wanted to touch back on that you said, and it's true, is that it's a lifelong recovery. It's something that we're working on all the time. And, to think that would be available, I just wonder, would you ask an internist or a neurologist, or what kind of doctor do you think you'd have the best shot if you were going to try? Just somebody,
well,
I guess, who's connected with a machine, right?
The doctor I work with is a naturopathic doctor, because naturopaths, it fits right in with their philosophy of natural ways, means to deal with illness or issues. So naturopathic clinics are, and I'd say the internet is a really good tool to find and locate where some of these hyperbaric chambers are. And there's more and more of them getting out and about, because people like Neubauer are doing more and more workshops and medical conferences, and they're starting to see the wisdom. The ones who don't like it is the drug companies.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a natural method, you know. But,
but I
would say oxygen bar would help.
I was going to say, though, at $1,200 a pop in the traditional field, they got to be still not that competitive with the drug industry, but still, that's no small chunk of change for a machine that's already bought, you know, especially when you have to have that many treatments to make a difference, you know, at $1,200 a pop. So I'm going to be talking to my doctor about that, because, one, you know, carrying pain with you every day, like I do, I have some tissue damage from where my incision was when I got my craniotomy, and I not only have the migraines, but this horrible pain in my jaw that radiates up to my dent, and I know that it's tissue damage. And, you know, to carry that around every day to some degree for the last, well, now it's been 18 years, you know, you wonder about the fatigue that a lot of us get, and just a lot of the maybe emotional swings and different things. And a lot of those things are intertwined, you know, because if you're carrying around pain all the time, it makes everything else a lot harder. So it's no wonder that the focus is off a little bit, or any of the other things that we talk about. It seems to me like that kind of a treatment, if it could relieve some of those underlying problems, some of the other things, you know, as a byproduct would improve or possibly disappear.
Yeah.
So
I found another option on the internet as we're talking. It's hyperbaric oxygen. You can buy a chamber for $5,500. Or you can lease it for $150 a month. It's
really?
www.healingdives.com. They call these dives when you go in the oxygen chamber, I think based on that history of it, you know, being used for deep-sea divers. So they use the term dives. But there's a multitude of sources for leasing a chamber or buying one, and these portable ones are not prohibitive, whereas like the one I told you about at the hospital is chrome
right.
and glass, and it looks like it's a Cadillac, and it's expensive to buy. But there are ways to lease them, and that's just on the internet here in Montana. I'm seeing this whole wide range of places where you can access chambers on your own.
God, that's great.
You just have to have someone on the outside to open it up.
And if you're using that piggy bank effectively, like we were talking about earlier, you can almost probably afford that lease in a little while. I did type that into the chat room, and I'm going to bear repeating that. The site that he was just reading from was healingdives.com. So that might be a place to check it out, and also Google your state or your city. And, you know, that word, or ask around to some of the naturopathic doctors in your area, and they may be aware of where some of these machines might be located in your area. Like, I know we have one down at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, but they just won't prescribe it. You know, that you can't get into the thing. So you almost have to try to find an arrangement like what you've got going, because they are not free and loose with that treatment, you know.
You buy the chamber, you don't need a prescription. It's
right,
not a
exactly.
drug. It's mm-hmm. not a surgical procedure. It's oxygen in this equipment, like buying a diving equipment, you know, air tanks. So you don't need a prescription. And this one is 7 feet in length. It goes up to 4 PSI, which is the highest I've ever gone when I give treatments. And it's 23 inches in diameter, and it's $5,495. You do need a second person to help make sure that the pressures are right, and that if it starts getting where your ears are hurting and stuff, you have someone that can reduce the pressure and eventually let you back out of it. So it's
right.
Usually, at least in my case, a two-person process.
Okay, that's
but
great.
But according to this, there's
you'd think they'd give a handle on the inside and controls inside, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, it does say there is ease of use for self-treatments, side entry for easy access. So I guess if this is a more modern chamber than I'm using, and it sounds like you can do this by yourself.
Wow.
But it's right online, and it's a beauty. It's a big white, looks like a giant tube, and it's got the air hooked up to it, and the hose, and you're ready to go.
Get in
okay.
there and find Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Keith Anthony, hang on just one second, everybody. I just wanted to say real quick, anybody who wants to stay on, and we're not going to be that much longer, but dial 424-243-9540. If you have any questions or comments for Ian, again, the number into the show is 424-243-9540. Also want to take a brief moment to thank one of our sponsors, Gordon Johnson. He's at tbilaw.com. If you have any litigation issues connected with your TBI, check out their site, tbi.com. And Gordon has done some amazing things for his clients. So that's a place to start if you have those kind of issues. So now with that being said, we can come back and talk, but I wanted to pull out a surprise here for just a moment, if you guys on the line will bear with me. When Ian and I were talking, we were talking a little bit. He's told you about his experience as a playwright and in showbiz, and we talked about that. I've been an extra in a couple of movies, and so we were talking about the arts and healing through the arts, and he let it slip out, and my audience is going to laugh about this because they know how I am about musicians, and so... Ian walked right into my trap somehow. He actually wrote the music and the lyrics to a beautiful song, and a buddy of his, Steve Zediker, performed, recorded, and produced the song, a beautiful video, which of course we can't play here, and Tim Todd plays the violin, but I'm going to let you guys hear Ian's song, and it's just really a beautiful song, and we didn't have it last week because we weren't able to get everything together in time for the show, but I guess there was a little bit of a, if there was any redeeming feature about that horrid technical difficulty last week, it allowed us to spring this surprise this week. So 3 minutes and 51 seconds, we're going to take a break and listen to a song that Ian wrote, and this is called Peaceful River by Ian Elliott.
Quiet river, God's gentle voice divine. Trusting in you, I go forward, leaving all doubt far behind. Peaceful and quiet. quiet river flowing through heart and mind, source of my courage and wisdom. You taught my spirit to fly. Flow, river, flow, soothing my soul. Flow, river, flow, onward you go. Song of life, music that dances within me, painting the darkness with light. Peaceful and quiet river, you are my special friend. You're always there when I need you, faithful and true to the end. Flow, river, flow, soothing my soul. Flow, river, flow, flowing through heart and mind, source of my courage and wisdom. You taught my spirit to fly beyond the sky, beyond the sky, beyond the sky.
Call you. Okay, bye.
That was Peaceful River, both the music and the lyrics written by our guest Ian Elliott, performed and recorded by Stephen Zediker, and the violin with Tim Todd. And I just think that is such a cool song. It was so beautiful. Jenny, in fact, I'm going to unmute Jenny. She hasn't gotten a chance to call in yet, but I feel the same way as her, so I'll just let her tell you her comment, and it was what I thought too. Jenny, welcome to the show. You're on the line.
Hello, Kim, and out of respect, I want to say hello, Mr. Elliott. I know your name is Ian, but out of respect, I'm going to start by calling you Mr. Elliott. I want to say thank you. You are a blessing for calling and sharing, because everybody just really was excited about hearing from you last week, and we had the problem with Blog Talk Radio, but sharing your personal experience, I was really excited and I was really bummed, so I'm so grateful that you came back.
Me too.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot to me to hear that.
And I have to tell you, your song, Peaceful River, I had to close my eyes and I just listened. It was absolutely beautiful. And thank you so much for explaining HBOT, because so many people are confused out there. And I've posted this show on over 20 open, closed, and hidden TBI and ABI sites. And people did not know and don't understand. So I think this will help so many.
I sure hope so. It's helped me, and that was, you know, I was about 15 years post injury when I tried it, and it still helps.
Well, it's been 6 years post TBI for me, and I just have Medicare, but I don't know that I could afford the leasing. I wish that they would just go ahead and approve it for insurance. insurance so that I could try it, because I think it would be wonderful, because I have grown so much in the last six, eight months. They know me on the radio very well. All the hosts are my family. And I think it would be a major help for me.
Well, I sure recommend it, and there's I like that idea of leasing, and you might end up getting two or three people, because you do the session for about, I give them about an hour at a time, and then you want several hours for the brain to back basically absorb the oxygen and work with it, and then you do another treatment, but you can't do them back to back. You have to have a gap in there. Well, during that gap, someone else could be getting in there.
That's a great idea. Talking to other survivors in your area or maybe in the support group. That's a great idea.
Like a co-op.
Right. Exactly. They do in the states that allow medical marijuana. We can actually do co-ops for HBOT all over the nation.
Yeah. That's really a good idea.
We haven't heard about that here in Montana yet. Yeah.
Is that legal in Montana, did you say?
No. Well, they've tried to. It was legal, and then they made it illegal, despite the fact that popular vote. Then they had a referendum, and the population, by far, wanted, you know, passed it to be back, and they've rescinded it. The legislature hasn't listened to its own population in terms of that. So there's still people of working on that issue here in the
state.
Well,
I was told by my dad that in Pennsylvania, it's maybe a month away for them to vote on it. So I'm hoping that it's passed here.
Yes, you can grow your own here. But you can't give it out to other people, and there's certain limits as to how much you can grow and that sort of thing. But it's all just a matter of this political dynamic, trying to figure it out, and don't give up.
Well, and what you said, too, about the, you know, the competing, you've got the pharmaceutical industry competing, you know, they're a pretty big lobby, you know, so that'll be an interesting turn. It seems like a lot of things like that are possibilities. All I can say on that count, and it's the only comment I'll make on it, is that it can't be any more dangerous than a lot of the medications that, you know, don't have even the time under their belt to see what the side effects are. So, you know, something that's herbal, Native Americans that you were talking about earlier, you know, they certainly have used some herbal remedies over the years. They might have started the holistic healthcare movement with some of the things that they were doing. And so that'll be an interesting thing to watch. The only thing I can think of is money and politics that's holding that back. I don't know why the government doesn't think they couldn't make as much money taxing it. That pharmaceutical industry seems to be something to be reckoned with, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes,
you can't ignore it.
I actually think that if we were to legalize it and for medical use only, not for just recreational, but just for medical use as needed, it would provide major jobs, major sales for businesses or places. It would also create hemp, which can be used for fabric and all kinds of other industries. And on top of that, the government would get so much taxes, it would bring back the country financially.
Yeah, well, we would sure hope so, but we'll keep an eye on that one. Well, thank you, Jenny. I appreciate you calling in. I wanted to skip back to the song for just a minute and ask, have you written other songs?
Yeah. I don't read music, but I just hear them in my head and figure out a way to play them or find somebody who can. Like Tim Todd, just to let you know, he's a national champion fancy fiddler, former champion. So he played backup to that, and he was here in Montana for a while. Now he's down in Nashville. But the songs just come to me, and if there's songs that don't and I have to work on them, then I know that they're not as – they generally don't do as well. This one came to me, words and music all in one sitting, really. And,
wow.
And that's a gift from divine – the divine in my belief, it just came to me, and I didn't work very hard, and it was just there, and I could hear it, and I just played it, and the words came to me. Whereas I'm a playwright, and sometimes I had to really work to get a scene right, to get the dialogue right, or short stories I've written and stuff. And every now and then you have one that just flows, and this is one that just flowed. So I've performed this with others who were better instrumentalists and vocalists, but I usually want to be part of it. And I've done this every year at Christmas Eve since 1988 for an alcohol and addictions treatment center. They have a Christmas Eve service that's closed, especially for the consumers and their family members. And that's the only time the family members are going to see their loved one who's in treatment. And they be with them during that service, and this is a song that I play every year, and I have some others, vocalists and instrumentalists, that help me. And it's just one of those songs. It just has a special meaning.
It is. It's beautiful, and I wish everybody could see the I do want to make a comment. They just kicked me out of the chat room and said another user tried to log in, so whoever the user is that just logged in, could you please log back out so I can keep my chat room open, please? The video was just fabulous, and Les, I wish he'd put that on YouTube. You know, not everybody can be Steve's friend, but that is just a really awesome video. I haven't happened to have been in Montana. I'd love to visit there sometime, but the videography, however you say that, it's just gorgeous. The song is beautiful on its face, but when you see it with the video and the actual peaceful Montana river flowing through and the nature, you're kind of torn. I did the same thing when I first heard the song. I sat back in my chair and closed my eyes and just listened to it and loved it, and then had the opportunity to watch the video, and it's really awesome. So he should post that around a little bit.
Well, I sure hope that we get it out and about. I'd like to become famous with songs like that. I just have the right vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to tell you that your music is so beautiful and inspirational and comes from the heart. I couldn't even do chat. I had to close my eyes and just listen, and it just flowed through me. It was so peaceful and so inspiring. So don't ever stop and just go with what comes to you, because it's a gift from above.
I sure will. And I really appreciate the support for that, because, I play about six chords on the guitar, and I play all white keys on the piano, but somehow it always works enough to get songs that I've had pretty good feedback for. I've written songs for theater productions and that kind of thing. But Peaceful River is...
It is wonderful. You do wonderful. Regardless of what anybody's limitations are, we have the ability to, all of us, to do something so special that touches other people. And you have a gift. And I wanted to say, you are incredible, because you are so honest, but what you have created after TBI, not from your TBI, but with your TBI. You have created something and helped so many people, and I just want to tell you what a blessing that is.
Well, again, that feels really good to hear that. I know that I think a lot of people with TBI and any disability tend to focus on the lack of what they can't do that they could before and that kind of thing. And I started saying, what about this experience gives me, strengthens me, gives me, other than the fact that I lived through it, you know,
yeah.
With the help of a lot of medical
detail.
Professionals. And I don't discount their assistance, but really, what can I do with this disability that makes I can make a difference in where it, you know, in my view, it was a God-given event, and it's for a reason, and I still don't know what the reason is, but I'm just doing my best to keep moving forward and helping others with disabilities, and I find the arts to be a really great vehicle because I was program director of a program here called Growth Through Art. That was visual art, and we had people with developmental disabilities, and they're winning national awards with their artwork. Some of these people could not meet the reporters and verbalize anything. They couldn't, you know, they're just not able to, but yet their work, their visual work, spoke volumes. And that's the power of art. And anybody can do that. Pick
you
what
know,
you feel you want to try.
I was going to concur with that. That was another thing we talked about a little bit in common, and that's that I'm one of those that in second grade, you know, I was expected to have good grades all of my life, but in second grade we had art class, and I can't draw, you know, a straight line with a ruler. And the teacher said, well, not everybody is artistic. And that was one of those things that stick with you. And in fact, it became a family joke, you know, over the years about, you know, I'm not the artistic one. And interestingly, after my brain injury, and of course, you know, I was in business, like I told you, and so it was about as far away from the arts as you could be, you know, professionally, and I didn't do anything like that socially. But after my aneurysm, a few years after that, you know, I went through the grieving and the depression that a lot of us experience. And there was a moment in my life where I wasn't seeing the beauty. I knew on an intellectual level I needed to have the gratitude, but I wasn't seeing the beauty. And then I took up photography, was the first thing that I did, nature photography. And I've got a website for that, Kimoto Photo, KIMOTOFOTO.com, and started posting some of my pictures and did a few art shows. And you know, that was really cathartic. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I wind up, you know, writing some poetry and getting that published, and then ended up writing my book. And so I concur with you. And Les Paul is a huge proponent of music therapy. He karaoke's like there's no tomorrow, and he is just fabulous. You might want to think of his voice on one of the things that you write in the future. But you know, he's found a lot of recovery through the arts, as have I, and it's interesting. It's like getting, you know, not only a second chance at your life, literally, when you come back from these, but it is interesting that I've heard more than one person talk about the arts as being a conduit through their recovery. That's helped ignite that passion for something again. You know, I think if we had passion to begin with, anyway, before our injury about whatever we were doing, sometimes that passion takes a hit when our life goes through a dramatic change like that. And I've heard more than one person now talk about how the arts, whether it's music or photography or painting or writing or, you know, whatever it is, that a lot of people have found their passion again, and it's been like a jump start and a very valuable tool. And I was going to ask you about that, just two more questions, and then I know I told you an hour interview, and I've had you a lot longer than that. I got to commend you for being such a good sport and sharing so much, but you have so much to share. So I know you're on a different clock, and I won't keep you much longer, but when you became a rehab therapist, counselor, is that one of the things, and I think you might have even answered that you encourage clients or people that you're helping to get into the arts or dabble a little in the arts?
Yeah, I first learned about brain injury through Brain Injury Association for Montana benefit back when I ran the Babcock Theater here in Billings, Montana. And Scott Kasu was the featured artist doing the benefit. And Scott has a remarkable story in that he was hit as a pedestrian, hit by a car, and he was one of the pioneers of the Windham Hill recording label. And
really?
An excellent pianist, and he lives in Olympia, Washington. I just presented him less than a month ago, and we're going to have him play again for the statewide Brain Injury Alliance of Montana conference in October. But Scott put an album, he has several, but he did put one that he dedicated to his recovery, and it's called Stained Glass Memories. And I just thought, what a remarkable tribute to all those that helped him get back, because he was seriously injured, and to help get him back into professional performance level on the piano, and he's very articulate. He still has issues with memory here and there, but don't we all? But at least most of us. So I just think he's a great ambassador for art as a vehicle to express one's inner being who's gone through the disability process, whatever disability it is they have. And when I ran the Growth Through Art program here in Billings, primarily they were developmental disabilities, and some of them won national awards at the VSA International Art Show in California. And I said, how many Montana artists would love to have their work shown at an international exhibition in San Diego, California, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just said a lot about the power of art.
Absolutely. That was one of the first places that I, you know, I was out taking this this nature photography, and it was right in front of me, and I was photographing it. But it wasn't registering until I uploaded the pictures to my computer. And then as I was looking on the computer, I refound the beauty through the lens of the camera, you know, after I was looking at the pictures. And I went down, one of our big local attractions is a botanical garden here in town, and I took a shot. I had a background in sales my whole life, so this was just a different venue, different product, and I made up some note cards and a couple of little things, and I went in and just cold called their gift department and asked them if they'd be interested in carrying any of my pictures, because I had a lot of close-ups of flowers and things that would fit well in their gift shop. And the gal looked through my portfolio and she said, you know, I really like your stuff. Yeah, we'll put your cards in our store, but would you like to have your own exhibit? It would be a 7-week exhibit where you'd be the featured artist. And I had to laugh and pan back to that second grade, because I was, I don't know, about 50 or 51 when this thing happened, and I pan back to however old you were in second grade and that teacher telling me that not everybody, oh, it's okay, not everybody's artistic, and all the years that I wore that mantle, and this lady is asking me to be the featured artist, you know, for a 7-week stint, and I was really blessed. I about dropped over dead because she said she'd check the calendar and get a hold of me and let me know when, and it was a year, their first availability was a year down the road, and at first, you know, I kind of had some feeling about that, but ultimately it worked out because it took 36 pieces to fill the gallery. And I had some framed and some were gallery wrapped and some were on presentation board. I like to do a lot of variety. And it took a year because with each one of those piggy banks, you know, every single month for that year, I was buying a piece or two, a big piece or two, you know, of my own artwork. And I remember the first day I walked into the gallery and I about hit my knees in gratitude, you know, a tear went down my eye. I couldn't believe it, you know, that from where I had been just a few years before and what I was told when I was a kid and now where I was standing was just awesome, you know, and those things are confidence builders. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we suffer initially after our injuries is a time where our confidence is shaken, you know, especially if we can't go back and do the things we did before just the way we did them before. There's frustration and you know, the ego takes a pretty big hit, and there's a little fear of, you know, am I ever going to be able to get a life back? But you don't know at that time that you really don't want your old life back, because more will be revealed and there's a new life in front of you that's going to give you a whole different dimension of confidence and self-esteem and joy and passion and pleasure. And if you would have told me that in my first year of recovery, especially the way I did it without any help, I wouldn't have believed you. And when one of our callers, Keith Anthony, talked earlier about, you know, some of the people that don't have the support and the suicide rates and that kind of thing, you know, one of the things I like to say is stick around until the miracle happens. Because if you get off the bench and go out into the playing field, get past your fear and just do it, as Nike would say, I just, like, all kinds of new doors opened. If you would have told me 3 years ago that I would be a published author and a radio host now, I would have laughed, you know. I would have never believed it. And it just happens, you know. When you make the effort, it happens. So, you know, to not let the, like you said, to not focus on what we can't do anymore and stay in the pity pot or stay in the depression and actually take the action to move forward and try some things, and without expectation, you know, because it's not like we're going to go out and be the best at everything, but the fact that we're able to do it at all is just such a gift, you know. It's so gratifying that at times like that, I would never want to redo my ruptured brain aneurysm, don't get me wrong there, but now that it's over with, there's a lot of things that I've experienced in the last 17 years that I never would have had the opportunity to do if things wouldn't have happened exactly the way they did.
Well, I really believe in that age-old wise saying, holding a resentment is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
How did you know? That's so funny. That was the name of one of my shows a few weeks back.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly one that I adhered to early on when I first heard it, and I've used it. And another thing I've done is every time I say I can't do that, I can't fly a plane, I add the word yet. Because someday I might figure out a way to do some of these things I've wanted to do. And rather than just shut the door ahead of time, like the workman's comp tried to do with me, saying,
yeah,
you're done, you no longer have executive level function, I want to find out for myself. So I add the word yet to any of those self-limiting statements as often as I can remember to do it. And it's, there's slips here and there.
Sure, but very important. There's one other thing, and then I know a couple people had questions, and I'm going to let you go. You must be getting tired. But I was also very impressed. One of the lines in my program notes, and we'll type it into the chat room. It's also in my program notes if you guys don't see it. But as we know now, Ian is also an accomplished musician and playwright. And then I say, check out his website, and it's www.concertsforkids.org. And I'm going to type that in when he starts telling us about it, concertsforkids.org. Tell us a little bit about that. You're so all about service between all of the different things you do. And then I saw this and spent some time on your website and just thought that that was really awesome.
Well, it's a start with an idea, like most things. And someone came to me and said, Ian, you're doing these concerts for general public. But what if we could do concerts that were free for families, for kids? So they would see them professionally staged and be able to enjoy it, especially if you're a young person. How many times did you see your parents go off to the symphony or go off here and there and you weren't able to go? Why not
right.
go to a place, to events where you're invited and actually honored guest to attend? So we started, this will be our fifth summer series of concerts for kids, and the artists are all told this is an uplifting community project. We have no money. We really honor your and nurture your talent. You can sell your CDs, but we will set up the sound for you and the stage. We'll work to get an audience, but there's no performer fee paid. It's just what we're doing. It's pro bono work for the artists. And I've had artists such as Joe Firecrow, Grammy Award-winning native flute player. We had Jeff Troxell, who's a national champion fingerstyle player, guitar player. Trevor Krieger, who's a state champion fiddler. And a lot of others that are just professionals and come and share half an hour of their time and talent in this. And we put three acts up on the stage per night that we do these. And it's presented by the Billings Brain Injury Support Group, which I facilitate, because one thing it does is people come in to the concert just to hear a concert. They'll see a table with information on brain injury prevention and brain support for people with brain injuries that might not know there is things like vocational rehab there, service available. So it's a way to get access to our information by an audience that might not otherwise come across it. And I don't know how many times I've had people come up to me and go, I think my sister had a brain injury, and I'm so grateful to receive this pamphlet with the 800 number where she can get connected in her community to a support group and that kind of thing. So
that is such a great idea, the way you've got everything dovetailed like that. That's beautiful.
I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I have left lobe damage, which controls science and math. But my right side is where your creativity side comes from. And that seems to absolutely drive me. I find that I'll hear words on the TV that inspire me, and I will verbally, because I don't have a pen and I have trouble writing, I have to be at the keyboard to type, I will actually write something inspirational that hits me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll write poetry. And that, it's just something that inspires me and just drives me, and I constantly do it verbally to the wall. Is that normal?
Well, writing it down, that's a really good practice, to write it down and keep something handy. So, because these moments of inspiration are usually fleeting. And
yes.
I'm always coming up with book titles. I have yet to write the book, but I've got great titles. And I list
cool.
them. And another thing I've done is I have in my computer file a file that says inspirational quotes. Anytime I hear things like, you know, the holding resentment and drinking poison bit, things like that I hear, I put them into that, and I'm able to use them in presentations, formats, and that sort of thing, or just share with friends, occasionally put on a card. And all it is,
well,
is just being awake and open to
show,
receive.
I was allowed to do it on, but I was actually able to read one poem, and I'm only going to say the name of it that came to me, and it just came to me all of a sudden. It was "The Sky Is Our Only Limitation." And I was able to read it out loud on the radio, and that was amazing to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and now we have NASA even putting that one into the past.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. There seemed like there was something I was going to ask you about the concert for kids, but I know Keith Anthony has had his hand up for a couple of minutes, and I didn't know we had all the mics open. Keith Anthony, what was your comment? I'm sorry.
Well, it is lost a bit now because I was going to comment on something you said ages ago now, but you were talking about how at school they said you'd never be any artist, and finally you had your art up there. And I was thinking at that time that back in 1978, when I was paralyzed, I thought I wanted to be on stage speaking to people and motivating people, and I was paralyzed at the time, but I made the decision. And I just plucked this figure out of the air, 35 years. I could have picked 40 or 20, and I was going to be walking and be back in society and doing well. And it's been 35 years now. And in September, as many of you may have already realized, I'm going to be on stage for the first time teaching advanced hypnotherapy techniques. And so I'm really excited about that, because I'll also be able to share my story, because I've always known that I'm supposed to, or we are supposed to, share our stories, because they inspire what we call able-bodied people. So I'm excited about that, because 35 years it is, and I'm going to be on that stage and talking to those hundreds of people.
Congratulations.
Thank you
very much. Congratulations. That's a lot of hard work into that and dedicated effort, but that's what it takes sometimes. And if it means that much to someone, I just say go after it, because whether you reach it or not, the whole value of it is the process. You know, I wanted to be a state champion. Well, I wanted to win a speech contest in high school. I was on the forensics team, and I ended up winning 9 out of 11 tournaments my senior year. And I represented Montana at the National High School Speech Meet. And for me, every time I got a trophy, it was really cool for about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was ready to look on to the next tournament. Because the really enjoyment isn't the trophy, In fact, they ended up in my closet, you know, for years.
Yep.
And they meant so much during that the time where people were pursuing the winning first place or second place. But it's the process of what that did for me and got me a speech scholarship to college. So that's just
Ian,
about setting goals.
You speak very well, Ian. Were you given any training to help you with your public speaking, or did you do it all off your own back, just natural talent?
Well, I'm Scottish-Irish. So we tend to be fairly talkative. But, yes, I was also a theater political science major in undergrad. And
this is Jenny. I'm Irish. I don't know what else I am because I was adopted. But I do know that I'm Irish and I do gab a bit. But I try not to. But when I first started with Brain Injury Radio with Fantastic Frank, he interviewed me and it was one-on-one. And my speech was very, very slurred and I had trouble pausing in between. And by Brain Injury Radio and all the hosts and Kim and Les and Keith Anthony and I could just go on. It has helped me because I listen to the shows afterwards and listen to how I speak and it's helped me improve my speech so much just on my own with their help.
I have some advice for people and that is never. You need to start off, and Ian was saying that he didn't like the trophies. And the important thing is not the trophy, but the journey is what's important. And you must never give up on your journey. So decide what your positive outcome is, but the real prize is the journey. And my journey's taken me for 35 years. I never quit. I just kept piling through all the shit that I've had over the years. Just keep going, because if you quit, your goal is probably just around the next corner. So you can't afford to quit.
Yeah.
Whether you have to keep going for a week, month, year, 5 years, 10 years, or 35 years in my case, and it's worth it, because I'm really looking forward to being on stage, and I'm sure you're all looking forward to whatever is your positive outcome. So don't ever quit. Just keep your mind on your positive outcome, and that will help to keep you strong.
I think that's a good point. The way I say it is it's the journey, not the destination, for the exact reason you said, Ian. You get to the destination, and it just kind of feeds your more, 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 next thing, next thing, next thing, and you miss the stopping to smell the flowers part. You miss the little blessings that are in the journey. And then the destination is kind of a letdown, you know, when you're really enjoying the journey. I think that's the part of it. And, you know, the destination is the gravy, but, you know, the journey is really the part that we're living in. You know, I heard somebody say once on tombstones, you've got the date of birth, the date of death, and the dash between is the life we live. You know, that's the journey.
I just wonder if Keith is going to hypnotize his audience into giving him a standing ovation.
I don't think you'll need it. Keith, let me field this one for just a minute, and then you can talk. Only as someone who's experienced your hypnotism before, and I'll tell you, he isn't going to need to hypnotize him. You'll have to tune in on a Saturday night, Ian, sometime when Keith Anthony is on. He has talked both Les Paul and I down from migraines and just does a phenomenal job with hypnosis. So I think, you know, him being on stage, I sure hope they YouTube it or something so we can see it in person. He eggs me on a little bit because I won't turn on my Skype. I use Skype, but I won't turn on the camera thing because, well, I never said it to the audience. At this time of night, I'm in my jammies, and I've already put my face back in the drawer, so I rue the day that we ever have to have the camera on. But I would look forward to seeing Keith Anthony when he makes his premiere on stage, because he's very gifted where where the hypnosis, and I like to refer to it, he calls it hypnosis, but I've always kind of referred to it, which I got no business doing, but as creative visualization. And
well, you're
know,
absolutely right, Kim. It is creative visualization. That hypnosis word is a misnomer. Is that the right word, misnomer? But it's not accurate. It's like, if you compare it, it's like saying that a bus driver is a happiness specialist, because he can drive you to the beach, but he can't do the happiness for you. You have to make your own happiness when you're on the beach, don't you? Did I make sense there? I'm not sure I did.
Yeah,
you're the one to do it.
right, and that's
but
what he does.
But I won't be hypnotizing anybody when I'm on stage, because I shall be up there to teach them hypnotic techniques and motivational skills. And
I look forward to hearing your presentation, Keith. I made that joke about standing ovation because it's something that any theater guy would really love to be able to do.
Well, let me tell you, I will get a standing ovation, because not because I'm going to be very clever or anything like that, but that is my positive outcome. I've decided that if I do it right, if I say all the things they need to hear, then they're just going to give me a standing ovation. It's the law of attraction. And I have had a standing ovation before, which was rather interesting. In fact, I've had one twice, because when I first started walking, when I actually let go of my bed and walked away from it without falling over, all of the patients in the ward started cheering and clapping in a really loud manner, and I was really taken back because I was not expecting that, and I was quite a bit nonplussed. I didn't know what it was all about. But when you imagine that hospital ward is what I now call the ward of despair, you can imagine that if they saw anything positive, like somebody who'd come in like dead virtually, is now walking away from his bed, gives them all hope, doesn't it?
It does.
Keith, do you have possession of the dashboard? If you do, give him a rousing standing ovation for being on the show.
Actually, I've got that. I'll spin that up here to the top and see if I can get that. In fact, I'm going to give a couple. If you guys don't mind, I'm going to mute you. We got like 10 minutes left in the show. We know, for those of you that want to stay on, go ahead. But I told our guest an hour, and he's been gracious enough to be with us for three. So I'm going to make our closing comments after. Let's see. We have this one. Well, why don't we give him this one, because he stayed longer.
I have my finger on that button. I was going to do the same one.
And as a bonus,
Oh, my golly, I feel so privileged and honored. Well, I'm going to have to sign off myself, Kim, and others, because I've got my mom to attend to right now.
I understand. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Again, I apologize for last week. I think we more than made up for it this week. I want to remind you and everybody else in the audience that this show will be archived and available tomorrow. So that link that I sent you, now that you know that the show came off, if you want to forward that link, that is also the archive link as well, Ian. So you'll be able to replay the show or share it with friends or anything that you want to do. And the audience is all typing in. God bless you for coming, and great job. And so thank you so much. I love you to death, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Absolutely. And you're sending me the link, right?
I can send it again, but the same link that I sent you for the show is the same link that will take you to the archive. But I'm happy to send it out to you again in the morning.
Okay, that'd be great. Then I'll just do a simple forward. I got lots of friends that I was unable to let them know about this, so that'll be great. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
And I'll get back to my mom right now. Thanks.
Sounds good.
God bless.
Take care. You too. Good night. Okay, everybody, that was Ian R. Elliott. I think that he was just a wonderful guest. I'm going to start unmuting the mics of anybody who's left. We can talk for a few more minutes, but I'm probably going to edit off everything from here on out so that I can send a clean link to Ian of his interview. I thank God, first of all, tonight that Blog Talk Radio performed the way it was supposed to. I was a nervous wreck for one of the first times ever coming into this show because of all the trouble we've been, technical trouble we've been having. And I'm also really grateful to Ian, not only for giving us a second chance and coming back this week, but I told him an hour interview and he stayed with us for three. And then next, I want to thank Keith Anthony for expanding the show for me while we were on the air, because I was afraid to touch anything and have anything screwed up. So thank you for having my back on that, Keith Anthony, as well as on the switchboard tonight. That made me feel a lot better to continue. But I hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and we can do overtime or we can sign off. It's up to you guys. I'm just I appreciate you all being here tonight. And I guess I'll thank our sponsor one more time, Gordon Johnson at tbilaw.com. We like to thank him for being one of the sponsors for our program. Remind you guys that all of the shows on Blog Talk Radio are archived and then available on demand for listening at your own leisure. And about the 4peer11.org site, as we're watching our peer-to-peer support line grow. And I think that is most of our commercial messages. So did any of you have any closing comments or anything you wanted to talk about?
I do.
Okay.
If I'm allowed to plug my own show, which is on in 5 hours' time.
Yes.
And that is at croydonradio.com. I will be doing the 50th anniversary of the Beatles visiting Fairfield or performing at Fairfield Hall's Croydon, which is just over the road from where I am. And 50 years ago today. And so I will be doing a two-hour tribute show playing the Beatles Blue and Red albums. So Les Paul, if you're around in 5 hours' time, you'll be able to listen to some more. And
he commented in the chat about, sorry to interrupt, he commented in the chat, I don't know if you caught that, he listened to your last Beatles show, and of course with the kind of Beatles fan he was, he commented in the chat room what a wonderful show you had.
We were chatting during my show.
Good.
You can do that in the shout box or the chat box on my show, and you can put them also into my diary. So if you all want to help me, go to croydonradio.com, look for Keith Anthony, and make a message in my diary. You know, say what a fabulous hypnotist I am, or what a fabulous host I am, and just generally butter me up, and that'll make me feel fabulous.
Oh, good. We'll
do
that.
Am I allowed to do that?
Yes, certainly. And it's you might want to correct that. Why don't you type that into the chat box? What is it? croydanradio.com.
I'm typing it. Did I type it wrong?
Keith, he had croydon, not an.
No, it is don. That is correct. That is the correct spelling. Don.
Okay. Great. I just needed to, for 1 minute, I didn't realize that we were, we've got 90 seconds left. So actually what I do want to do, if I can find it real quick here, is I was so excited about our guest, I didn't close the show in the usual way and roll over. I didn't realize we had as much time as we did. So I am going to close the show before we roll over in my usual way with something that time and time again we all prove that we have, and I can't find it. My God, I can't find it. Well, you know what it is. It's
Guardian Angel.
I think I'm just going to let it roll over. Why don't you guys take a break for 4 minutes? I can't find my ending on here, but I'm going to close the show in the usual way with something I believe we all have, and that's a Guardian Angel. This is by Leah West. Check her out at leahwest.com.
Well, I think we're still here. I'm not sure what's happened to Kim, but we seem to be still here.
I'm sorry. I muted my mic because I had to do something. Again, that was Leah West. Yeah,
I know. You just can't get the staff.
No, I can't figure it out when I mute my mic. But one thing I noticed in the chat room, and you other hosts might want to look at it, I had about 20 songs in the chat room, and there's 6 now. So I don't know if somebody's been unauthorized at cleaning house or if we wound up having trouble with that other problem we were having. But in any case, yeah, I had like 20 songs. There's 6 in there. My ending is gone.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I've got them all on my desktop. I'll reload them, but I'm not sure where they all disappeared to. So if any of you do have sound bites that you use for your show, you might want to check before your show and make sure they're still there.
I seem to have all of mine, as far as I'm aware. And
yeah.
I've still got the drag racer. That's still here.
Yeah. Well, I've got, like I said, there's 6 or 7 of mine there, but I've had like...
It might be because of...
Yep, still got that one.
I have a feeling it was because her show was on tonight, because, like last night, my show was under attack. Very bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just went... say before I head out, I just wanted to say bless you, Ian. Elliot was wonderful. Kim, you were great. The show was wonderful, and I just wanted to say night night, everybody, all my family. I love you guys.
Thank you,
Jenny,
for all your support.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your help.
Yes.
I've been having trouble on my other show because we upload our tracks to Dropbox so that we can send them from our computer to the studio. When I got to the studio, somebody had deleted them all.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to do a reggae show and I couldn't do it.
Oh,
well. Well, I don't know.
People are so jealous. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, we've been having a lot of those technical kind of difficulties, but in any case, I think so I can give him a clean copy of his show, and we ended it like we did, that I will end the show now so I can send Ian his link in the morning. And I think he was afraid to promote the show anywhere because of what happened last week, and so now we've got a clean cut of the show, and
awesome.
This is probably a good time to close it, but I want to thank you guys so much for your support and being here, and that worked out great. I don't think since the beginning I've ever been as nervous as I was tonight, and you could tell that in the beginning, so it really helped to have your support, because especially on a second guest, as you guys might have been able to tell, I'm kind of a perfectionist, and I was so aggravated about what happened last week that if it had been a new guest or just me doing a topic, I still would have been irritated, but to bring a fella back for the second time, you know, who's not as familiar with Blog Talk Radio, I was just very worried, especially after what happened to you last night, Les Paul. So thank God Ian got his clean interview.
I'm debating on if I should do mine next week, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, I'll have a show on Saturday. Has anyone looked at my show title for my Saturday show?
No,
I haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay. Not to worry.
What is it?
Tell us.
You're asking me what it is. This is strange. I've lost all the controls in my window now. It won't let me scroll or anything.
Uh-huh.
That's very odd.
See how that works? And I lost my chat room in the end.
Read it out. I was going to read it out.
It's whoever's doing whatever's going on. I talked with Craig about it today for a long time. I called him while I was at work. After I finished talking with Keith on his radio show, I called Craig. And we talked for a while about how bad it was on my show and how it was bad on Kim's show, even worse the time before.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he's got several things he's working on to try to resolve this.
My show title for Saturday is going to be In Space No One Can Hear You Scream.
Oh, I remember hearing you say that today. Yes.
Yeah.
How intriguing.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Because in hospital, nobody hears you scream.
That's right.
I think that was the name of a science fiction movie. I can't remember what it was, but I think that was the name of a science fiction movie, a horror movie or something like that.
That's Alien. It's from Alien, Frank. From Alien.
From Alien.
Oh, you're right. Okay, yeah.
No one can hear you scream. And because of that phrase, I've always said, in hospital, nobody hears you scream. Because you really hear in hospitals, don't you? You think that somebody's having something done to them and everything's okay because there's nurses and doctors with them, and you can trust nurses and doctors, can't you? The opposite of what there is can't.
You'd like to think. Well, that'll be an exciting show. We'll look forward to hearing it. Frank, what do you got going this Thursday?
I have no idea what I'm going to be doing. I've been trying to get this woman to agree to be on my show, and I don't know if she is or not. So I might just wing it tomorrow night.
I think it might be interesting if you told your story. You know, like I told you, people have heard bits and pieces of your story, but you've got a unique story. A lot of us have had aneurysms or AVMs or, you know, car accidents, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But you really have a unique story. So if you don't come up with a guess between now and then, I think it'd be real interesting if you told your story in total instead of the bits and pieces that we've heard, and that'd be a really good show. And then
that'd be great.
And then I luckily have the next 3 weeks booked. It was just one of those, it's feast or famine all the time, but I don't want you guys to confuse that. Next week I have on a guy named Dr. Robert Frazier, and he's got some very impressive credentials in the neurology field working with TBI. And then the following week is someone else named Ian, which is very weird. Ian McCallan, though, it's a different Ian, and he's an author. He actually, it reminded me of your deal a little bit, Les Paul. He's
okay.
A father of a son who had a TBI, and they got into, he wrote a book about that experience from the caregiver point of view. And then
all
the
right.
Following week, I'm having his son Andrew on. And so
that sounds good.
Yeah, father and son, two different weeks, getting to hear the perspective from both of them. And as a lot of you know and have experienced, some of us have some behavioral issues after our TBI, and that caused that caused some estrangement in their family, and so they're both going to talk about that from their perspective. So looking forward, I know the next few shows. So it will be interesting to hear both of their points of view. That was kind of funny that we both came up with a father and son. Circumstances a little different, but yeah. So that'll be pretty cool.
It's interesting, Kim, that you said Frazier, because I was in the hospital earlier on, talking to somebody called Frazier in one of the beds. Isn't that a coincidence?
Good God, I hope it's not my guest. He's a doctor. He shouldn't have been in one of the beds.
Yeah. Well, they get tired, you know, they need to put their feet up from time to time. They've been on them all day.
That's true. It could be. Yeah. All right, you guys. Well, I'm going to close out the show. I think this is a good length of time to have Ian be able to pass on the link. So we'll see you tomorrow.
Kim, I interrupt one thing about who was talking about the dash. The dash
I was.
Between you were. There is a book out there called The Dash.
I know. I don't think
there's
any such thing as original thought anymore, is there?
No, there isn't. I just want to tell you, there is a book out there called The Dash. I think I got a copy of that. I can't find it right now. But it's about what we do between our date of our birth and the date of our death. that makes all the difference in the world.
Exactly right.
So, just wanted to mention that to you.
That's cool. I'll have to look that up. Yes, thank you, Frank, and thanks, Les Paul, Keith Anthony, and the rest of the audience who listened tonight. I know Ian really appreciated it, and I appreciated it, as all of us hosts appreciate your attention and participation. So, good night, everybody.
Thank you, Kim.
Good night, Kim.
Thank you, guys. Good night.
Thank you very much. Fabulous show.
Thanks. Night, guys.